Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
And, you know, maybe a little, it's nearing summertime, so maybe you're going to get a little slushy or...
I had a gelato the other day.
Ooh.
A little gelato was nice.
Maybe a little Rita's or like, you like Rita's? You ever go to Rita's?
What's Rita's?
No, they do like slushies, but they also do ice cream, like soft serve, and you can mix the soft serve and the slushy.
No, I'd never heard of that.
They got one in the Upper West.
I'll go check that out.
But it's a chain, like, kind of, in other places. We have a really exciting show today. As you guys know, as Seif says, you read the description, so you know Kid Capri is going to be on the podcast today.
Right.
So you already knew that. Yeah. But, Seif and I got to catch up on a few things first. And also, I want to give a shout out to, have you heard that new Meek Mill song?
Which one?
There's bevels to this?
No.
You ain't rocked the same shave.
Because bevels to this ish. Bevels to this ish, yeah.
Yeah, you haven't heard that?
I heard it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. So
you ain't got a clean shave. You ain't looking like you rave.
Because it's bevels to this ish. Getbevel.com. You guys want to change the way you shave. You want to make sure your face looks as... If you were... The other day I saw Seif... forget where it was, and it was a picture of him and his baby, and I didn't know whose skin was smoother.
Oh, you're talking about the day after I used the bevel?
Yes. I didn't know whose face was smoother, yours or your baby's now a
1 month? One month old baby.
So I was like, whose skin is smoother? Is it you or a 1 month old baby?
Right. Because mine is pretty smooth.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to have this experience, you go over to getbevel.com. You use the code WANTEP. You buy the kit. They send you this beautiful, luxurious looking razor. It's going to avoid skin irritation, bumps, and ingrown hairs and all that. And you're supporting the Juan Epstein podcast simply by going to getbevel.com and use the code WANTEP.
Thank you. And my baby thanks you.
For the compliment or for the money coming in?
The money. Yeah. The money coming in.
The support for one app.
Well, because I eventually want to get her own bevel set.
Wow. Really? But don't get ahead of yourself. She's only a month old.
All right.
I mean, give her some time.
She's got to clean up that rough skin.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot going on. So there's a lot to catch up on.
Yeah.
Seif, I met Barrington Levy today.
Oh, was he at the station?
Yeah.
I think I cast one Instagram.
Yeah, it was actually it was one of those... You know, you look at the calendar that gets put together, and, you know, for those of you who don't know, I've probably said it about the podcast before, Eber likes to book shit, miss. So you look at the calendar and be like, what am I doing today? And this was one where I was like, this could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it turns out it was really cool.
It was good, right?
Yeah, he's super honest.
Yeah, he's cool.
He doesn't even know. He didn't even realize he was talking shit. He was just being himself. And guess what? He put out his new album, Acoustica Levy, with, read who it's put out by there on the bottom.
I can't see that. It's too small.
Dr. Dredd.
My old boss label.
Yeah. Nice. They're working together. And Dr. Dredd is currently selling delicious jerk potato chips and peanuts.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm going to get you some. Believe me.
That sounds delicious.
I'm going to send you a case to your house. 100%.
Thank you.
You and the baby will be eating. Can the baby eat peanuts yet?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She's on, I gave her steak. She didn't like it.
Well, it's like she doesn't have teeth.
Yeah, she liked the lamb, though. I gave her, like, some good lamb barbecue, shish kebabs.
Oh.
Yeah, she liked it.
Now, are you concerned about the lack of teeth with the large pieces of meat?
I don't make weak babies. No. Her gums are strong.
The gums are strong.
Yeah, I'm not out here making weak babies.
No, that's true. No. That's true.
Fuck that.
So, Seif, I saw the other day, how was working with Jim Gaffigan on the Jim Gaffigan show?
Can I tell you that, did you see the call sheet?
Yes, of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, I got a spot, a little part in this Jim Gaffigan show, new show coming out, I believe on TV Land.
Have you watched the debut episode?
No, I gotta watch it.
You're a piece of shit. I went and watched it the other day. It's really good.
The show was very funny. You know, him and his wife write everything together, so she was there, like, almost directing.
Directing his fake wife.
Huh? Oh, she wasn't in the scene we were in.
So you were playing a part, though?
Yeah. Hold on, Jamal's calling me. Oh, he's never been. Has Jamal ever been on One App?
I don't know.
Hey, Jamal.
No.
You're live on One App. Live on One App.
Huh? Yeah, you're on One App, Jamal.
Oh, what's going on, guys? I'm big fans. Big fans.
Oh, thank you.
Big fans of our fans?
I'm big fans of you guys.
Why is he plural?
Really quickly, are you cool with Hampton Inn, Fort Lauderdale, near the airport?
Well, you're killing it these days, bro.
I'm sorry.
Yes. I'm actually very cool with Hampton Inn because they have very nice rooms, clean, and you get free breakfast from 6 to 10. And there's always apples and bananas in the lobby.
And Jump Shot Jay.
All right, let me lock it in, brother.
Lock that in. Scythe just did a live read. Go, I want you to get Scythe paid. We just did a live read for them for Hampton Inn. We should get paid for this.
Okay. Right. I don't think he understands what live on one means.
And why did he pluralize himself?
What did he say?
You didn't hear that?
No.
He goes, big fans. Well, what do you mean? We're plural. You're one.
You singular bitch.
What is he talking about? Anyways.
All right. So real quick.
So
Jim Gaffigan. Then there's a couple actors. Michael Ian Black.
Well, tell us who they were playing, though. Each person.
Some of them I didn't see, but the ones I saw, let's go down here. Macaulay Culkin and Alec Baldwin.
Same episode.
All this is the same episode. Macaulay Culkin and Alec Baldwin, some guys in the street seeing Jim talk to himself. Questlove, all the Roots, Jimmy Fallon, Kirk Douglas.
What?
Steve Buscemi, Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, Whitney Cummings, Gilbert Gottfried. Alec Baldwin, I said. It was...
But I don't understand. How is he doing that for one episode?
One ep. Not one ep.
One ep.
Oh, hi, G-Code.
G-Code. But I don't understand. How is he doing that for one episode?
I can't tell you. I can't give away the fucking secret.
Well, you don't know the secret. But the
I do know the secret.
You do?
Of course, I was there.
So there is a secret?
I can't tell you the what the episode's about. I don't know.
No, but I mean, how is he getting so many people in one?
You mean like... Like, how does he pull those people to come and be in it? Or what's the episode about?
I'm sure he knows them. Yeah. But, like, Kirk Douglas?
I think everybody loves Jim Gaffigan.
But, I mean, you and I are fans of Jim Gaffigan, and I mention him quite a bit. And, like, he's on the verge, but he's not he's a comedian star, but he's already out of here?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's bigger than we think.
I guess
so. I was asking him. Okay, so I had a moment. Me and Jim.
Well, by the way, have you gotten to know him at all over the last few weeks?
Last few weeks.
Well, you auditioned for the show, didn't you?
Yeah, not with him though.
Oh, so casting director?
Yeah, casting guy. But I came out of the trailer.
I saw the trailers. I was on your Periscope.
Amazing.
I was watching it.
Amazing. I come out of the trailer. He's there. He's like, "Hey, thanks for doing this." I hate when people say that because I'm like, no. Thank you for having me. Like, what, you think I was going to say no? Like, you think I was sought after and I was like, I don't know if I want to do that.
I don't know. Did you want to really do like a little bit comedy role on a comedy show with a comedian you love?
So he says, thanks for doing this. And then we go to shoot. He's hectic, but I'm in the scene with Whitney Cummings, Gilbert Gottfried, and Steve Buscemi.
You're in a scene with
Steve
them.
Steve Buscemi is, what, 4 feet away from me?
Are you talking to him?
I mean, at first I was not bothered.
No, I mean in the scene.
No. But in between takes, he started talking to us.
Okay.
And he just starts fucking around with us and, like, saying stupid shit. And, like, everybody, it was fun as fuck, man. It was fun as fuck.
Wow. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And then, like, there was two other improvisers that were in it. We were, like, three guys that were sweating him when he came into this bar.
Oh, that's the role you guys played?
Yeah.
Hey, G-Code, do you mind grabbing Kid Capri? He's on the 8th floor. So
call him David Love. No, don't call him that. That's his name though.
So I was in Atlanta and I did a scene in Barbershop 3.
Wait, you were in Atlanta?
Yes, to go do a scene in Barbershop
3. Hilarious.
I'm right. I mean, I'm the star of Barbershop.
What is that?
Barbershop 3?
No, what was the scene like?
The scene, here's how it works. The scene is I've been hustling with my agents very hard. And so he got me a cameo.
Wow.
He scored me a cameo in the movie. I went down there. I was not in the script. So I spent the entire day not knowing what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Treated me really good. I was on my call sheet's amazing too, by the way. You see the call sheet. Eve, Cedric, Common, Ice Cube, everyone.
Yeah. Hey, did you see any of those people?
I did not. Oh. I did not. I did a scene though with Sean Patrick Thomas.
Who's that?
He's the guy from Save the Last Dance.
A black kid?
Yeah, who's in all the movies. Now, I'm making a joke about this because it's fun to make fun of myself. I had a friggin' blast.
I'm sure.
They treated me amazing.
Yeah.
The movie is actually the script. That's probably the coolest part, right? Is getting like the watermarked entire script.
Right,
and blah, blah.
Right, yeah.
The script is actually amazing and really like they actually talk all about it's so current. They talk about Freddie Gray and like it taps into, you'll like this actually. They make the theme of the new Barbershop 3 basically about how bad Chicago's gotten the last few years.
Oh.
That's what it's about. So it's a great movie.
But you were in Atlanta?
But we shot in Atlanta.
But it's based in Chicago still.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But it was because of costs. They were able to move there. But the funny part was, they treated me amazing, because when you're actually listed on the script as an actor, I wasn't like an extra.
Well, no,
like,
you get a whole nother treatment.
I sat in a trailer, I did the thing, and then I went out, and basically they're like, but here's the thing, when you get added to a movie, basically, you know, because for a variety of reasons, people like you, they know you'd be helpful promoting it, I make sort of sense as a cameo, I'm in the hip-hop world, like, you know, it's not that illogical.
Yeah.
But still, you don't know what your line's going to be. So you're just kind of waiting, and I'm like, I'm here, I came to Atlanta, I'm on set, I'm wearing the clothes, I'm all set up. Yeah, like you're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
I went there by myself, and I'm sitting there like waiting for my thing, and I just don't know what it's going to be. And I'm not going to tell you guys what my one line is. I'm going to wait, because I got to milk this till next February when the movie comes out. And hopefully I will end up in the movie. But it was a super cool experience. It was funny watching you on one side. You didn't know I was doing it, but I was like, oh shit, Sife got one happening
too.
That's
crazy.
Except do you get lines?
I had one line, but then it ended up being like two or three, because we were improvising.
You improvised a little bit, so you don't really know what it's going to be. It could be they keep all of it.
It would be hard not to keep all of it. It was fast. It was quick.
So we'll see. I have my one little line. Sean Patrick Thomas, by the way, that dude's a real professional actor.
Yeah.
In case you can't tell. That's like a thespian. Like sitting in front of him while he was acting was crazy. And most of all,
I love seeing real actors.
Dude,
like, in the moment.
Do the takes over and over and over again. Perfect every single time. And then it's still.
Also, that means they had to keep redoing it because you were fucking
exactly.
This is my favorite shit. When I'm shooting, I go, sorry, I fucked up. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, it's my favorite too. And they did, but they shoot a whole bunch of times and you don't realize. I looked around, I'm like, there are no cameras filming me. So we're going to have to do this all when the cameras are filming me.
Right.
And last thing, let me say before we get to our amazing guest, the movie's being produced by MGM. Mm-hmm. Do you know the kind of machine that is to watch move?
I'm sure.
Like, it was pouring rain when we got to the location we were at, and watching them set up for a scene that has to get done quickly. It was in front of the courthouse in Atlanta.
Oh.
Watching them put together with a set that big, it was incredible. Shout out to Malcolm Lee, Spike Lee's cousin's the director of Barbershop 3. He was awesome. He does
The other Lee's direct?
The other Lee. Yeah, he does. Whoa. He does bigs. He did a movie I actually loved, Welcome Home Roscoe Jenkins, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh, yeah,
actually.
That was funny.
And he did Best Man Holiday. He's done a lot of stuff. So anyways, it was very cool. Hey, Sife, are we all caught up?
I wanted to hear about your Amber Rose thing.
The Amber Rose TV audition?
Yeah. Well, we could come back to
We'll come back to it after our guest.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are people out there. I'm not going to say, I have a lot of people out there who say this.
Yeah.
A lot of people out there who say he's the greatest DJ of all time. There are people out there who say, if you want to get very specific, usually here's what happens. You have a conversation about DJs and people talk about technical DJs, talk about radio DJs. And when you get to the essence of a DJ, it's the party DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And people will generally say that this man right here, Kid Capri, is the greatest party DJ of all time.
That is a big compliment.
Sife, have you heard that before?
I have heard that before.
How do you feel about it?
I've said it before.
You've said that before. Yeah. I think you have. I think I may have.
Many times.
I think you're one of the people I've heard of. You say it to Kid Capri. You've said it to him.
I won't say it to him.
No, fuck that.
He's got a big head.
He does. I know. I understand. Of course.
I won't give him compliments to his face.
He also laid the groundwork for you being a Def Comedy Jam DJ. Mm-hmm. You going on to be the DJ for Chappelle's show.
Right.
You know
there was
saying?
No DJ in a comedy show before Kid Capri.
No. So Kid Capri, welcome to Juan Epstein.
What's up?
I'm happy to have you here, man.
I'm glad to be here. Kid now, I was a little Capri. Traffic, man, but I got
oh,
here.
Oh, please, don't worry about it. I was late.
And I was stuck in your damn stairway. Well,
we have a high-level security.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, we do a lot of things on here. So I don't know why, you know, we never know what happens why it is that we get to people when we get to people. You came in and did an interview for a morning show once when
you were
promoting the DJ show.
Yeah, Master of the Mix.
Master of the Mix.
Yeah.
But at the time, we were like, damn, we need to have a full conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Sife, I'm going to sort of defer to you here. I have some specific places I want to get to with Kid Capri.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to let you lead where you decide. I'm not letting you do anything, but you should lead. Where do you want to go?
No, I think I'll tell you a couple of my highlights and then we go to the beginning. But like the famous picture, I think, I don't know where it's from. Is the source, you in the hallway of your apartment, So I know I'm from the Bronx, and there's certain Bronx apartments that have like that same hallway.
As soon as you come in the doorway,
as soon as you come
my
in,
equipment. That was the first thing
equipment
you saw.
Right there, and it's that picture. Well, like before vision boards were a thing, mm-hmm. that picture was on my vision board. Mm-hmm. Like the setup, the way it was just in the hallway with the mic, with the gooseneck, and I believe there was it records on top.
There was all the tape decks and amps on top.
Right, right. All the equipment was on top, mm-hmm. and it's literally like.
But this is in the hallway of his apartment.
And the music was so loud in the building. And I want to give a shout out to everybody in the building that never called the cops on me. They always let me do my thing.
What floor did you live on?
Fourth floor, 42A was my apartment.
Where was this? Where was that building?
That was 2899 Kingsbridge Terrace in the Bronx.
Kingsbridge Terrace. So that's like what's the off like the cross
Kingsbridge Road. It's off Kingsbridge Road, and then you come down by Cedric Avenue, Heath Avenue.
So five train.
Four train is on Kingsbridge Road, and the one train was on Broadway.
Oh, one.
So
okay.
I'm in between both of them.
Okay, so kind of the west side of the Bronx.
Yeah, 4-train, the D-train is over there, as a matter of fact.
Hey, Syfe, I threw on Periscope for a little bit. Why not do a little Periscope live on 1M?
Sure.
You can follow Syfe Sounds or myself, Rosenberg Radio.
I just got it, so I don't know.
I know, you're early in the game. I mean, by the way, I'm a full week in the game, so. So when you were in, what age did you get the turntables, Kikapri?
8.
Who gave them to you?
Well, the first equipment I got was a mixer that had no headphone hole. That's how I got better than all the older dudes in my neighborhood, because I had to guess all the spots on the record.
Your mixer didn't have a headphone
hole. Didn't have a headphone hole, didn't have a power cord to the wall. It had a phono one, phono two, aux, and a mic.
How did it not have a power thing to the wall?
It was a cheap little mixer.
So how'd you plug it in?
Batteries?
No plug-in. You just put the turntables in, and that was it. But it had no headphones, so I had to guess all the spots. So I would look at the spot on the record I wanted to play.
So basically nothing electronic was happening in it?
No.
It was just connecting the one?
This was just connecting just the mixer. It was a mixer, put the turntables in the mixer, that was it.
And so the only thing the mixer was doing was serving as a way to cross from one to the other.
It.
So it didn't need any electricity.
Nope.
It was just... Syfe, have you ever heard
didn't
of
even have, didn't even have a, didn't even have a crossfade. It was an up and down mixer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you were 8 years old. Dad, did you know that this was something you wanted to do?
I knew I was going to be DJing. You know, it was a thing that came out. It was it. But I didn't know I was going to, I knew I was going to be big at something. I know it was going to be that. You know what I'm saying? And
oh, you had a big personality.
Up. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Already, even at 8?
Even at 8. My dad's a soul singer. He was the first soul singer to be with a Latin band called LeBron Brothers, which is a big orchestra. And before him, my dad played trumpet for Dizzy Gillespie, Count Basie, Miles Davis, and all the jazz greats. So music always been around the house.
How do you play trumpet?
I got the trumpet,
for the greatest
too.
Trumpet player.
Yep.
He was another trumpetist.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he was a sit-in.
He was a trumpeter.
Definitely. He was incredible. I got his trumpet, too. He bought a trumpet in 1940. I have that trumpet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, what was your name at this point?
DJ Dr. Spank. Terrible
wow,
name,
really?
Man.
Really? Syfe, you want to add that to our list?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, Dr. Spank is pretty bad.
Horrible.
It's terrible. And there was a girl we grew up with named Olga Carter. One day we was going in class, we was in the same class, sixth grade. She said, Kikapri sang a good name for a DJ.
Just literally just
that's
random?
Out of nowhere. Just Kikapri sang a good name for a DJ.
Kikapri.
I ended up trying it. Like, we used to go to this sporting goods store and buy sweatshirts to put our name on the sweatshirt. So I did that, put Kikapri on it, and a couple of months later, she was killed by a stray bullet.
What?
Yeah,
whoa.
Yeah, she was shot
right,
by a stray
thanks
bullet.
Thanks for twisting so that story.
Yeah, yeah. So I kept the name and it just...
But so now, your name has always been invented by her. That's really awesome. How old was she when she passed away?
She was 12. 13.
Oh, my
13,
God.
I was 12.
So it was a 13-year-old girl who created your name.
Yes, sir.
That you've had now.
Just randomly told you one day, Kikapri's
Kikapri
a dope name.
Kikapri sounds like a good name for a DJ. You should try it. That's what she said.
Try it out. See if it works.
See if it sticks. And they like it.
That's what she said.
Now, do you think she was thinking about Capri Suns?
They wasn't out there.
There was no Capri Suns back then.
This is pre-Capri Suns?
This is pre, yeah, yeah.
I wonder where she got that from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hold on. Why? I can't find
the picture. Well, how would I search that picture?
Which one?
Kikapri apartment.
Source me used that picture for me to be the hundredth issue for the greatest DJ of all time or something.
Yeah.
Oh, so Source Kikapri, greatest DJ.
I'll keep looking.
I just seen that picture recently too.
So you're just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
What records are you playing?
I was playing breakbeats. My first breakbeat I bought was Paradise. But you know, I always had records for my dad and all that. And when it came out, you know, me and this kid up the block named Lamont. He would buy one record, I'd buy a record. He had a little bit more money than everybody else at the time, so he would buy the turntables. I'd bring my little mixer with no headphone hole up there.
That was your contribution?
That was my contribution.
Was the shitty, terrible mixer?
Yeah, and he'll buy a record, I'd buy one.
Now, when you say you'd each buy one, you'd buy doubles, you're saying?
Yeah, because you had to buy two. One. Of course, he was cutting, so you know, it was a different thing. Now you have a computer where you could...
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You are so crazy. That's what we'll get there later. But this is 12 inches?
12 inches, albums, 45s.
Everything?
Everything.
So even back then in the early days, because, you know, in the last year and a half, I've become obsessed with 45s. You'd occasionally buy 45s.
I got 45s. I'm on my 45 thing.
Yeah, so I know. I've seen you on video, too. I've watched your video. Come on, man. I'm paying attention. So, but back then, you were getting some.
Yeah, well, you know what? The 45s wasn't such a big deal back then. It was really the albums and the 12 inches. The 45s was something that we used if we couldn't get the other album. We used to play one album and play the 45 of it. So that's what it really was. But we didn't really realize how valuable they was back then, like they are now to us.
Of course.
You know,
it was they were almost kind of annoying. I mean, when I used to see 45s, I would just think, what the fuck do I need this for? Why do I want? But I grew up in the 12-inch era, though.
Yeah, but you know what? The reason 45s are so important is because a lot of records that was made on 45 never made it to an album.
Yeah, never.
You know what I'm saying? So there's more of accumulation of them. And, you know, if you go from the 68, from 1968 to the time they stopped making wax, a lot of different little record companies in them little cities, they put a little record out with a drum beat on it, record never went nowhere. It didn't mean nothing to them. They didn't make no money, but to us it means everything because of that little drum beat that's on it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, and there's so many of them, and that's probably a little bit more important than the albums are.
Now, Sy, speaking of which, I know you don't normally care when I ramble about 45s. This week they put out, you probably still say you don't give a fuck, but maybe you think it's cool because you love the album so much. They put out the entire Clips first album on 45.
What do you mean, right? Each song has its own 45?
A-side, B-side. So it's like 6 or 7 records. So there's one with like Cot Damn and Motto, Love Her, and there's... Let's see.
I gotta tell you, I'm not really too much into the rap 45s.
Yeah, fuck a rap 45. Yeah.
I'm not too much doing it. I have a few boxes of them, but I'm not really into them.
Well, if you listen, if you have a few boxes of them and you're not into them, we should have a conversation.
I will gladly
come by, Kika Ray.
You come by,
take a look at what you don't care about.
That's right.
So you started getting into all that shit, and when's the first time you start getting on at parties, or you start actually doing this, and it's not just practice?
My first party, my first big party was with you know what? I'll tell you what. I was doing a bunch. Before I got known, I was doing parties in the houses and little apartments and schools and stuff like that. You know, it all started when I was doing it in my house. I was doing little parties in my crib and on the block and little community centers and stuff like that. So, but when I started getting known, that's when I would be DJing in a place called Kingsbridge Heights Community Center for little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the daytime, and then at nighttime, I'll be in with the drug dealers in the SNS Club. And that's how I started getting known from there, selling my mixtapes in there. While they were selling 20 out of cracks, I sell $20 out of tapes. And get the
Can
same
I come
thing.
Into the club? Are yeah. you a drug dealer? No? Well, then no.
What were you putting on the tapes, and how were you mixing? Like, did you know what you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, me and Star Child had got big. Well, Star Child was already doing it, but then when I started playing in SNS with him, you know, it became just something different. It became real special. And
you guys were known as kids playing? Like, was that a thing that you were young?
No. This was later on.
So this is already teenagers.
This is when I first started getting known. But when I was back, I was doing everything by myself. Everything when I was making the tapes, making tapes for myself, not to sell them. You know,
and playing for friends.
Yeah, playing for friends, parties, houses, apartments, churches. I was doing outside. I was always outside in the park.
What other DJs, known DJs, were around in the parks near your house? Were there any like legendary DJs you got to watch, or were you mostly
there? Was legendary DJs to me. I mean, you know, if you talk about Flash. And,
no, I don't care. Tell us the ones for you. Like, who are the ones
for me? The very first DJ I seen that made me run home and tell my mother I wanted to be a DJ was this guy named B Ward. He was with a group called Rockwell Incorporated. And he was so nice on the turntable. It was like he was talking to the needles. Like, he would just talk and it would just drop wherever he wanted. And I was just watching him. I wouldn't talk to no girls, wouldn't dance, wouldn't go to the bathroom. I just studied him the whole time, ran home, told my moms I wanted to be a DJ. And that's when she brought me that mixer. And from there on, my life changed.
Do you think Rockwell Incorporated was actually incorporated?
Like,
do you think
I doubt it.
Do they have a tax ID number?
I doubt it.
Do you think they were actually LLC? I don't think they were. Incorporated. So,
but they were definitely the superheroes in the neighborhood.
And this is what around what time?
This like, 1976. I started DJing.
Woo!
Mm-hmm.
So this is when I mean, you're talking about the origins of this culture,
the
right
beginning.
Here.
This is the beginning. Like, at every level.
What were they rapping, or was it mostly DJ?
When I first heard it, I was on my block, and a dude named Gerald that we grew up with at the time. I just had met him. He was playing dice, and he was throwing the dice against the wall, going yes, yes, y'all, to the beat, y'all, throwing the dice against the wall. And I'm looking at him, saying, "What the hell does he mean? Yes, yes, y'all. What is he saying? I didn't know what he was saying." And now I went to a party with B Warden them that Friday. At Marble Hill Center, you got to pay $1 to get in the center, and you get in a joint. And I seen the MC get on the mic, CB. He say, yes, yes, y'all, 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 with the echo. I said, oh, shit.
What the fuck?
Yes, yes, y'all, y'all, to the beat, y'all, y'all, freak, freak, y'all, y'all, you know, stop, stop, stop. I'm like this, oh, shit. Y'all Ooh. Ran home. And that was the beginning. My whole life changed from then on. I was 8.
By the way, let's call it what it is, Saif. Yes, yes, y'all is still a great one. I mean, whoever came up with Yes, Yes, Y'all. Yes, Yes, Y'all is like...
That's hip-hop.
To the beat, y'all.
Who came up with Throw Your Hands in the Air? Throw your hands up in the air.
Tell us.
I don't know. You know what? I'll tell you who did it. I think it was Cowboy.
You think
Furious Five.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
You think Cowboy from Furious Five came up with Throw Your Hands in the Air?
Yeah.
And what about Waving Like You Just Don't Care?
I don't know about that part.
Oh, there's so much. It's like there's so many things I'm curious about. Y'all were, I just can't imagine being around it and being like, what is this?
Yo, but the thing about it is that all those things I learned from back then and seeing everything and growing up into it, it all applies to what I do right now. When I get on the stage right now, I take all that with me. It's the same feeling, you know, and I never stop it. I never change. I stay the same way. And it all comes from learning, seeing everything and accumulating everything and putting them on the melting pot together. And that's how, you know, I satisfy these people.
Are you married?
No.
Have you been married?
No.
Never?
Never.
You've been single the whole time?
I've been not single the whole time, but I'm single. I'm single now.
And you have kids?
I have two daughters, yeah.
Two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say there is, Kick Caprice, you have been on a run of performing in front of women for about 25, 30 years.
Long time.
And during those...
And I still feel brand new.
You look invigorated. You do seem like you're always very excited to be doing it.
Yeah, because I'm happy. You get upset when people stop you from trying to do what you do, and when you're not good enough or you don't have the drive to stay in it, when you don't keep your ear to the street and you bitter because the people don't want to, you know, follow into what you do. I stay in my lane. I stay out of people's way, and I really love what I do. So that's why, you know, I'm always in it. I always listen to what the little kids is doing. I always listen to what the grown-ups is doing, and nothing changes. When you come to one of my shows, you get satisfied no matter what your age is.
What's the first big club you started rocking at?
The first big place I ever played at was the Hotel Diplomat. That's when I did it with legendary people. That was my first show. I was about 14 years old. And I was up on stage with Eddie Cheever and Jimmy Splicing. Who else? It was a bunch of people, but they were all legendary people back then. And to be up there at that age and rocking with them, I just thought I made it. And I was a little kid, but then when I really knew I was doing good was when I first started meeting dudes like Biz and, you know, Kane.
So early 80s, when you're a teenager, you started getting on at some things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And
parties, you know, it was 31 DJs on the block. And
what do you mean?
Between my building and two, three other buildings, there was 31 DJs in between these buildings.
So, do you hear what he just said?
Yeah.
Was Jazzy Joyce
one of them?
No, she wasn't on my block. I didn't know Joyce till years later.
Okay.
31 DJs
in between a two-building span. And when I came out...
That's psychotic.
Crazy. Yeah, the older DJs look at me like, who the hell is this little kid that plays like this? How does he play like that with no headphones on his head? He's guessing everything that he's doing.
He learned with a handicap.
It was crazy. It made me so fast. I was so fast that...
Is your needle drop game still great because of that?
Still nice. I'm not as nice as I was, but...
But you can still remember, if it was a particular single you know well,
mm-hmm.
like if I threw you the friggin' Hypnotized single, mm-hmm. you still have a general
idea
where
you went. I drop the needles on the Serato record.
You do Absolute Mode and you like to drop needles
absolute
there?
Absolute Mode. I don't play on Irrelative Mode.
Oh, really?
No.
All never. Absolute?
All that stuff you see me do is Absolute.
What?
You would swear his relative. Everybody, any DJ that come to one of my shows will be behind the stage with me. They see, they bug out because they see what I'm doing, and it's an absolute mold. How the hell are you doing that?
By the way, so real quick, for the people who don't understand, who don't listen, aren't DJs.
There's no way you're gonna explain this.
Okay, so here's the deal. So Serato, you guys probably know from listening, manipulates MP3s as if they were records. Okay, I'm gonna be really fast. Give me a chance. However, there's a few different modes you can put it. Internal mode, where you don't have to use the turntables at all. It'll simply play an MP3. Mm-hmm. Relative mode, where it's basically like you're spinning a record, except you can trick it. Mm-hmm. There are cue points. There are ways you can jump around with your keyboard.
In other words, you could press a button and it gets you ready.
And it gets you ready to go.
Right.
Absolute mode, which I was the same way up until a few years ago. Basically, it acts completely as if you're playing
a real record. And that's
if you
why
lift
I do
the
it.
Needle and you drop the needle, it moves the same percentage it would move.
Now, my thing was, I used to bring 15 crates of records on the road. That was my big thing. Like, everybody used to see that. And I run the crates of records and drop the needle on the record at the last second. Now, I'm doing the same thing with just one record in absolute mode. So that's what makes it a little magical. But the only reason why I do that is because I want to keep me on top of my game. We already cheating with the computer. We already lazy. It could make us lazy. It's already being done for us. So for me to stay on top of everything, stay as quick as I always been, I just keep it in absolute mode. And just
I love that. Now, we're going to get, I want to talk, Syph, at some point later, a lot about things like your records, like literally the bringing the crates, mm-hmm. the way you organized, how you stacked records. Like, there's a whole thing to the way Kid Capri
right.
mixes, and we'll get to that.
You're making a point?
No, but I'm just saying, so I do want to get there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, Syph, do you need to ask it now? You remember?
No. I have a videotape of Capri at Club Abyss mm-hmm. for Big Dennis' birthday
mm-hmm.
that mm. I used to watch. So fucking much, yo.
Just to why like, did you watch it?
It's just an amazing 45 minutes of just running through records, screaming on the mic, party going crazy, me in the baggiest Jabot jeans ever.
Oh, I'm sure. You can't. So now, but where I got started a while ago was saying that you've been running around the road for a long time, performing mm-hmm. in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at Maryland, you were up at Maryland like every year mm-hmm. performing for the Black Student Union.
Yes, sir.
You still do shows like that?
All over the world.
A lot of colleges still, too.
All over the world. I'm leaving this. Matter of fact, I usually would be on the road by today. But Saturday and Sunday, I only got two shows this week. Saturday and Sunday, I do Virginia and D.C. I'm leaving to Miami and Vegas thing to everybody else. But that's what I do. We go all over the country. We go everywhere, man. Places that people never stepped foot in. Crowds come to see me that never get anything. Like, you come to their city,
that's where I want to go.
That's crazy, man. Like, you
I
go
wanna
to
do
Pine
stuff
Bluff,
like that.
Arkansas.
Yeah.
Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Anchorage, Alaska, you know, like, just places like that. Like, places they never get nothing. And when you come, they show you so much love because they never get nothing.
That's my goal.
You know what I'm saying?
And when DJ stuff like that.
Yeah, when you do shows like that, it just takes you a long way, man.
So do you have random markets like that you've been going back to forever? That are like home for you, like they love you?
Over and over and over and over and over.
Like, you got bitches you have to avoid.
I'll give you an easy one.
Okay.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Every year they have the CIAA.
Of course. The tournament?
I own that shit. It's like you go to it and you know that when you come to CIAA, Kid Capri's party.
Of course.
You don't go to nothing else. It's not that you don't go to nothing else, but
that's the fucking one.
And I do five of them. It's five. It's always five joints, and they're all in the same area in the same club. It's crazy how they got to set up, but that's something that you always go. Kentucky Derby. I've been signed to Kentucky Derby since 1998 to now.
Damn.
Like, they gave me a 10-year contract from 1998 to 2008. Then they re-signed it from 2008. So whenever they stop, it's forever.
So, and that's with who? Like, with party
Dow
promoters?
Griffith. Nah, Dow Griffith. He used to be Dr. Dunkenstein.
Of course.
Right, and he does these these foundations.
So he's just a dude who's down there.
Yeah, so we have like 5,000-6,000 people. Michael Jordan comes through every year. You know, people like that come through, and it'd be crazy. We just did it. It was ridiculous. So, you know, doing stuff like that, doing NASCAR.
Every year.
Yeah, every year. Doing NASCAR in front of 100,000. You want those checks. You want to get in front of those people that's going to give you those corporate money. That money's crazy. Kentucky Derby, you know, you have football, you have baseball, you have basketball, but ain't nothing bigger than Kentucky Derby and NASCAR. That money is crazy.
Do you, if you wanted to take off for 10 years DJing, would you be comfortable doing so?
No.
What? What do you mean?
I don't mean, I mean monetarily comfortable. Because you stacked the paper.
I mean, well, you know, You know, the money, I don't really think about that, man.
You really don't even think about it. You just stack it
money,
up.
I've never been driven by money. You never heard. You never once ever heard Kick and Pre talk about money.
No, you never have. Never. But the thing is this. But the truth is, a lot of people who don't talk about money. You don't think about it. You've been making money forever. It's not a concern of yours.
Exactly.
It just comes in.
Exactly.
It just comes in. It's not a thing that motivates you.
Exactly.
You know it's coming.
And that's the good thing, is that you know that it's there. You know that you built yourself a market brand that you can go and people know who you are around the world. You can go anywhere and be able to work, and people respectfully love what you do, and you do what you do to your best of your ability. You try to stay in your lane and do what you can, but the best thing to know is that people respect you and love what you do and willing to call you. And see, I look at it different. I don't look at it as somebody, I'm just doing a party and people come. I look at it as when people come to my show, you know, I'm thinking about they gotta get dressed. They gotta buy clothes. They gotta get their self there. They gotta pay to get in. They gotta buy
it's
drinks.
A lot.
And they all do that because I'm there. You know what I'm saying? So you gotta give them the best that you can give them. And a lot of times, artists and different people in our business, they act like they're doing the people a favor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
You know, and it's just sad to see that, because, you know, when the people turn their back on you, it's hard to get them back.
Well, but hold on, but here's the thing. And this is what I want to get, this is very interesting, is that you obviously don't see it that way, and that's why this man continues to tour over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, because I look at it as a fan. I look at it as a producer. I look at it as a record company owner. I look at it as a radio station. I look at it in all angles. When I'm on that stage, I think about how I would want to look and how I would want to feel if I was in that audience watching myself, and what would make me like me. So I think like the fan. I think like the person that don't have a lot of money that's trying to buy one of my CDs or buy something or come to one of my parties. When I went to Japan.
Yeah.
And I've been to Japan 5 times. When I went to Japan and seen these people laying on the floor, sleeping on the floor just to get one of my shows, when I seen that, that just let me know the mentality of people. You could be a superhero to them and you don't even pay attention to it. And you not paying attention to it could either damage that person for life, like Stan or something like that, damage that person for life, or you could lose a fan for life, or subconsciously, you won't even gain any more fans because your attitude is not there. You don't see what's in front of you. Mm-hmm. When I seen that right there, people shaking when they met me and, you know, face all over the place, go to Africa, you know, my face all over the billboards everywhere, that's something that's humbling. That's something that you look at and you say, you know what, I want to cherish this for the rest of my life and I'm going to protect it. I don't understand how dudes don't.
But it's interesting because also you would say so you're incredibly humble, appreciative, nice to your fans.
Oh, no question.
You are also, though, you don't have a small ego, Kick and Pre. You know that you're the
when
shit.
When I get on that stage, I'm the cockiest son of a bitch you ever met. I think I'm the greatest. I don't think anybody could touch me. I think that when you come see me, I don't care how big your platinum record is, you're going to have an issue coming on after me. It doesn't matter. And I've improved that over and over and over again with all kind of concerts and all kind of tours. But when I get off that stage, I'm the humblest dude in the world. I know how to switch it off. I hate a little rapper that walk around like a little fucking rapper all day. You know what I'm saying? Like, turn it off. This is our business. This is what we do. You know, it's what we do.
You're
supposed to go up there and make yourself great. Nobody's going to make you great. You got to make yourself great. But once you get off that stage, how do you take yourself? Like, a lot of times, you know, people be in the business, they say, yo, all the girls, they like you because, you know, you in the business. Bullshit. I can have a name, but if I'm a dickhead, who wants to deal with you? Your name will get your name will put your foot in the door, yeah. Because you're the familiarity. But once they get to know you, what's going to happen then?
You're a fucking cockhead.
There it is. So it's the same thing.
And you know what? I can tell by the amount. Like, okay, it's very hard. If you were to have me explain Kid Capri's role in the culture to someone who was like didn't know, it's so to me it's so interesting. And I just thinking about it as I was preparing for this interview, you are like I forget. There's a comedian who references you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've heard it more than once.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, they're making fun of, like, they're talking about an event. Mm-hmm. And it's a black comedian. Mm-hmm. And they're making fun of an event being like, yo, this is the shit. Mm-hmm. It's the thing, blah, blah. Kid Capri's there. Mm-hmm. Like, you are the standard for in any market. If there's that shit happening, Kid Capri was playing it.
If there's a grand opening, they want me there first. If there's something that somebody's trying to promote a label or promote some kind of company, they want me there. It's like I built up a certain amount of trust.
A cachet, if you will.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? A certain amount of trust where people know, like I said earlier, when you pay your money, you want to be entertained. You know what I'm saying? You don't want bullshit. You want to go home and say, you know, I had a good time. Those 2 or 3 hours that you with me, I'm not really curing your problems, but those your problems is off your head for 2 or 3 hours that you with me. And that's what people care about. And the fact that I stay to what I do, I never try to, and I don't go out there running my mouth, getting on the internet for the sake of being on the internet, just talking and saying shit. I keep it music.
Promoting.
Outside of that, you don't need to know anything
else. What was the first big break for you? Like, when did things start to really go to another level?
When Russell seen my show. When Russell came and asked me to get on Def Comedy. I mean, I had a name from the mixtapes. I was already big.
You had the album already? The first Cold Chillin'?
Yeah, because
album?
What happened was I had got big with the mixtapes in the streets. So
was it Cold Chillin'?
It was Cold Chillin', yeah. Cold Chillin'. Kickin' Pretty Tape album. I got big with the mixtape, so that was the first thing I got, my first radio deal with BLS, and then the album deal. Also, what was crazy is when I first got the deal with BLS, I had to go on tour. I was committed to go on tour with Public Enemy. It was called The Greatest Show on Earth. It was 13 rap groups, Public Enemy, Naughty by Nature. Everybody was on that group. And I came out there with Kid and Play. And they took my mixtapes, BLS, and got somebody to edit all the curses out of the mixtapes and put them on the radio, and that's what they played until I came back off tour. That was the first time that ever happened. This shit had curses. The tapes sounded grimy. The shit sounded crazy, but it was really, really big. It was like when I got back, I came back to something crazy.
What's happening right now?
I don't know. You're playing for no reason without a wire.
I don't know what's playing. Sorry.
You never used the what? You don't know the button to turn the music off?
I don't know what's playing.
Oh, something else. Look at that animal.
Why was that?
I don't know. I don't know what you did. So hold on, and by the way, we have to get to the radio part too, because you know your success is so much as a show DJ, and people have a lot of love for your radio run, but it was also limited. You know, you didn't have the longest
radio
run.
But that's why it was so big.
So talk about your situation with BLS and radio in general.
I'm going to tell you. Hold on. My show was 45 minutes, which 40 minutes of playing music to 10 minutes of talking. But that was the reason. Oh, man.
So love this shit.
Who's on this song, Sai?
The Kid Capri and the... what was it?
The Lords of Funk.
Lords of Funk. No, it's Kid Capri rapping.
Oh, you rapping on it? Okay.
Yeah. What were you talking about?
So the radio. Why?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What made it so dope was that it was a 40-minute show with 10 minutes, 40-minute show with 5 minutes talking, 10 minutes talking, whatever. But that's what made it so crazy, because you got less is more. You see what I'm saying? So you only got a chance to hear me for these 40 minutes, but these 40 minutes were
and this
so
is on BLS?
Powerful. Yeah, this is on BLS.
And what year are we talking?
That was 91, 92.
Oh. Okay.
And it was so powerful that you wanted more. You wanted more. So you didn't get a chance to have the accessibility of hear me for 4 hours. You didn't get the chance to hear me for every day like that. You heard me every day, but you heard me for 40 minutes. And I made it so good that you wanted more. And that's what made the rate so crazy. And you know, out of all the stations that I came across, you know, BLS was the ones that let me do me. They never told me what to do.
Who brought you into BLS?
My sister was working for BLS. She was working for Von Harp at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember I used to go there with my mixtapes and try to get a job there, and they started slamming the door on my face and everything, and then I got hot in the street.
But no relationship? And you didn't know Marley?
I had no relationship with nobody. Everybody started coming to me once I got hot.
But Marley had to be aware of you, right?
I don't know. Marley was in
the thing. He was uptown, man.
You know,
it
I was uptown. Yeah, it was different.
It was different.
When I started coming downtown, that's when everybody started realizing. When I started doing the Powerhouse, when I did that, that's when it became a whole different game then.
So who were some of the first people in the game who recognized you as being like some serious shit?
Biz Mark was the first one that got my album deal, definitely.
He got you the album, Cold Chillin', of course.
I have to give a lot to Chief Rock and Star Child, rest in peace, because he was the one that when I came in the SNS Club was the place where you wanted to be, but it was the edgiest shit ever. Drug dealers, killers, everybody was in there. But it was like, if you was in there, you felt like somebody. And I'm sitting there for the first time looking at this shit going on. And, you know, start playing. I remember this kid rolled up on me, a drug dealer kid. Yo, I bet you my man Kid a beat star in the booth. And I ain't playing. I'm not doing none of that shit. I'm here to relax. And then Star says, nobody comes in my house and such and such and such. And I go up there, do one move, and then they're busting Star's ass. And then me and Star playing with each other. We start not playing with each other. We start playing music with each other. Correct that. He said, damn, kid, you should come play with me. So we start doing that for a year. Made the mixtapes. He used to make the mixtapes right there while he was DJing. So he'll sell them for $20. He told me to get down
live
with him
in the club.
Right, and then we'll sell them like Alpo and all these big dudes. They was come buy tapes from us and everything. It would be crazy. So we'll make the tape right there. Split the $20 for a whole year. We went through raids and cops coming in, and it used to be crazy. I did that for a year, and Red Alert used to come in there too and see us. And I remember Red Alert was going on tour with BDP, and he used to play for Studio 54. And he told people at Studio 54, I want Kid Capri to take my place. And they said, who's Kid Capri? We don't know no Kid Capri. You know, 54 is prestigious, whatever. And they put me in there.
Studio 54 is right downstairs from where we are right now.
Right. And we went in there.
Literally?
Yeah, right downstairs.
This address?
No, like a couple doors over.
Yeah. Yep.
Remember when Mr. C was taking a picture outside?
Yeah.
That's Studio 54.
Okay, 54. Oh, wow.
And then I started playing there. And when these people started seeing all these people that was coming to see me and how crazy it was just becoming pandemonium. I mean, it was rushing the fruit stands and hurting people. It was ridiculous.
So you had
to stop doing
a big following.
Big following, Studio 54. After that, I started selling mixtapes in the street again in Willy front
Burgers.
Of Rucker. And in front of Willy Burgers and Rucker. And that was the beginning of it. That's when shit
right.
blew up.
And we'll pick up right there in 1 second, Saif, after we give a shout out to our good friends.
Capri, do you ever wake up in the morning and feel like you have a little scruff and need to maybe take that down? Maybe
I just
shape.
Did it right before I got here. It was the last thing I did before I left my
and
house.
Listen, and listen. Right. No, listen. And Capri, listen.
I ain't got a haircut. You can see I didn't get a haircut today.
But listen. It looks pretty good. Yeah, okay? It looks pretty good.
Got it, man.
But I want to take it to a different level.
Okay.
I want to send you to GetBevel.com. Our good friends at Bevel, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take care of you.
Okay.
If you go to GetBevel.com, use the code WANEP.
Right.
They're going to send you a razor kit for an incredible price. They're going to hook you up. It is no skin irritation, no razor bumps, nothing like that. And the best part, Scythe, and Kid Capri, is that when you buy it like that, you're supporting this podcast, the WANEP podcast.
Oh, you know, I got to do that then.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to take care of you, though. I'm going to talk to the folks at Bevel and make sure you get taken care of. GetBevel.com. The code is WANEP. It's an incredible price, an incredible razor. They're going to give you a great discount just for supporting the One Epstein podcast. So if you can't beat that when you think about it.
Can't beat it at all. Can't beat that with a baseball bat.
Oh, hey, Saif, what do you think is, what would you say are Kid Capri's biggest strengths as a DJ?
Biggest strengths? Mic game is beyond recognition.
The best.
Because here's the thing. I've been trying to teach G-Code. That's G-Code over there. Teach her how to DJ.
That's right.
So it's making me go through my history logs and figure out what type of DJ I think should be studied and what type of... A lot of people talk on the mic, but all they do is say random shit and random shout-outs to nobody gives a fuck who, right? When I talk on the mic at a party, I'm trying to connect records, make my voice part of the entertainment of the music. Ladies and gentlemen, if that lady thinks she got da-da-da-da-da, and then the song I play connects to what I just said. I'm not just yelling, shout out to this guy, shout out to that guy. I mean, I do shout outs. Everybody does shout outs, but your voice is part of the party, and a lot of DJs don't have that strength.
And you think no one's better at that than this guy?
Kid Capri is incredible. His voice, I don't know what the fuck he is. His voice cracks through the speakers, whatever the frequency of Kid Capri's voice is, combined with the 808s of hip hop, it fucking cracks through. But he makes it part of the party. Then I've seen Kid Capri. You know, Kid Capri comes from the era of real turntables, needles jumping, and a needle will fucking jump to 2-3 bars or whatever before the part he was scratching, and he finds a way to get it back to the point.
That is amazing. I don't know. I watch him do that.
And it jumps, and he goes.
And he gets right back into it.
I'm like, what the fuck?
But to me, that must go back to the no headphones thing.
That's exactly what it is.
Because when you lose a spot, you're so used to getting back to it.
No panicking. There's things I've done that if people seen what I've done, they'd be so fucking amazed from it. But I'm the only one that know because I did it and I know what I did. So,
What's an example? So, can you think of anything like that?
Something like
I was at an event. I'll let you think about it for a second. I was at a thing just recently. Mm-hmm. Talk about panic. I was DJing in the UK and I was playing a 45 set. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it was a party that probably wasn't best suited for 45s because mm-hmm. the people who know me really know me from the internet and shit.
Right.
So they don't really know all that shit. I probably should have just been playing you know, current commercial hip hop.
Right.
But I had the 45s out and these girls were getting close to the barricade and they somehow knocked off the fucking, they pulled the mixer plug out of the power strip. It got knocked out of the power
mm-hmm.
strip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm having that moment of, the whole shit just turned off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the whole shit turned off. I need at least probably 10 seconds for me to look and figure, maybe more, maybe 15. And these are panic things that can happen in DJing.
You know what? I guess when you do it as long as I have, you just catch things. In moment, I remember one time I was doing the Beacon Theater and the computer just started strobe lighting. Shit just started going white.
Your Serato computer.
Yeah. And that's why that mic is important. That's why the use of that mic and what you say is so important, because if you know what to say out of your mouth, you can entertain people with no music until you get your
music.
If
the mic
back.
Is not connected to the mixer that just cut off, though.
This is true.
Now, that's
how I DJ. I usually have the mic connected to me.
You'll tell them you want
it. I'd rather it connected to me than the house system, because I have the ability to cut it down the way I want, cut it up. I can use the echo on it. I can just do different things.
Yeah, me too. But then the problem is if the mixer comes out and your mic's in the mixer and the turntables are in the mixer, you're shit out of luck until that shit comes back on.
Pretty much. That's why he's supposed to have another mic.
But he's not.
In theory, he's another mic.
Another sound
that's
man.
Connected
supposed
to
have
the
another,
house.
Have a house mic ready to go. You know what I'm saying? Have the CDJs over there ready to go. I'm not a CDJ, but have those ready to go in case anything happens. You know, you make proper preparations ahead of time. You know, do your sound. You know, people out there that don't go and do their sound check, go do your sound checks. Go do, make your show, you know what I'm saying?
Like you're a performer.
Care about the fuck you're doing.
You know, a lot of promoters, you know, they'll get local DJs that just accept anything. You know, I came in a club one time and the fucking table where you DJ at was pointing at the bathroom and the crowd was over here. You know what I'm saying? And I had to make them regulate it. Like, you know, that was the whole thing. Why do you have lights on your turntables? Why do you have so many records? Why you didn't this? Why you did that? Because I really care about my shit. I want you to look at me as the greatest shit. I can't do that by just letting you just put me in some corner mm-hmm. like I'm some local DJ. Fuck that. I go hard. So these people got to see me go hard. I'm not going to be, you know, take Jay-Z and give him a mic, tell him to go in the DJ booth. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do that. You know
so, Sive, when I showed up this year, I DJed the WrestleMania after party, which for me is a big deal because I'm a huge wrestling fan, right?
Yes, sir.
So I did this after party, and it's been years in the making of me knowing them. And they're like, oh, you should. And I know they generally, they just hire they'll just hire some local jabron and throw him mm-hmm. a few $100 and he DJs the after party. They don't think about it.
Right.
But you gave me the gig of doing this and I like idolize and love all these people so much. I'm coming to do a fucking show. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do my best.
Exactly.
So I got down to this, I went in there to sound check the day of the party. And when I walked in the room, it was in one of those fucking ballrooms at a mm-hmm. hotel. That's like, it looks like it should be for a bar mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked around. And they had the speakers set up in all four corners of the room.
Right.
So the only way to be able to play music that would be effective on the dance floor, you'd have to blast out no one will be able to have a conversation.
Right.
The whole party is going to be only music. And you have to recognize, and I'm sure you, with all the kind of shit you do, you know this, there are going to be old people there.
Of course.
I know there's going to be people going, turn the fucking music down.
Yeah.
And you're going to be, and even though you're King Capri, there might be someone who's like, turn the music
I've
down.
I've had an old lady, I played in a Masonic temple one time, and an old lady walked at me herself and said, young man, can you turn this music down? It's too loud for us. We're old people. I say, nobody older here. And I got on a microphone. And I said, if anybody think they're older here, we're going to teach you a little lesson. Mm-hmm. And I played this blues record. Blues record go boom, boom, doom, 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 doom. Start seeing these old people get up and have fun. I played another record that was the same type of record, just faster. Then I played Before I Let Go. Then people didn't sit down the whole night. And these were 80-year-old people. 80, 70, like these people are people that came in, sat down, and that was their night.
They were going to sit. They were going to be sitting.
That was their night. But because I let them know it's okay to enjoy yourself and have fun and get up. And once they got that spark, they wouldn't sit down the whole time. It was beautiful to see.
What's your most, what's the biggest, if you had to choose your number one Save the Party record?
Oh, man. That's tough.
Number one. Like,
for any age, any crowd.
The most generic. If you had to pick one record that you could always have at every party to save a party.
I'm going to keep it very, 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 very generic for y'all.
It's probably going to be that way if it's a real answer.
I'm going to keep it very generic. And you probably ain't even going to think I'm going to say this. But Fat Man Scoop record.
Hilarious.
Really?
That makes sense.
Which one?
Be Faithful.
I figured it'd be Faithful.
That shit is big everywhere. That shit is big.
That makes a lot of
everywhere.
Sense.
Everywhere. No matter where you go.
So if you pull that up just for a second.
You play that or play 900 number, that shit's big everywhere you go.
Well, did it replace 900 number?
No.
To a certain extent?
No. Nothing's going to replace 900 number. Because 900 number is not a song.
Yeah, it's true. But can you put to kids fuck with 900 number?
If kids don't fuck with 900 numbers because the DJs don't play the music on the radio, they play the same shit
well,
over
I know
and over
that,
again.
Of
so
course.
If kids don't hear it, they ain't gonna know it.
But I was saying is Be Faithful, you could basically run with kids probably could, I mean, 15 run, to 50.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way you play it, though. It's the way you play it. That's a big record right there.
This is Young Sounds College Money.
Bass drop. That shit works everywhere.
By the way, how funny is it that the song that you said is the song is really just Love Like This by Faith Evans, right?
How about but they it's just, a combination of everything.
I know, but it's also who would
choice,
guess?
Choice is yours. It's the guy yelling. It's everything.
The guy.
Well, I don't fuck with him.
What do you mean?
Big Colorado? I don't fuck with him like that.
I think you're bullshitting. He's lying. we need to get him on here, by the way.
Yeah.
I've never met him.
I actually spoke to him recently. I was trying to get him on this record that we were doing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got it. I've never had a conversation with Fat Man Scoop. That's interesting.
Me and Scoop used to call each other all the time and talk. All the time. Before he got on radio, he used to ask me a lot of advice about how he could do certain things and, you know, and
well, he must have learned a lot from you.
I don't know why they took him on. Well, he did.
That mic work.
That party record. Remember, the first party record was the one with me, the party group with Showbiz. The Been a Stretch record. That was the first party record.
Oh my God, you're on. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's the first part. I'm the first to do a lot and a lot of stuff.
This is the problem. We're not going to. I mean, by the way, we got to talk about. I mean, so yeah, there's Party Groove. Mm-hmm. What was your? Did you just jump on? Did he sample you, or you went?
What happened was I used to do.
I have the original.
Yeah, my original. My parties. I used to do this thing when I used to do the Been a Stretch. It was a dance I made up. And I used to say it live on the mic on this beat, and Showbiz sampled it. And put it to that record, and then seen me and asked me if it was all right if he could use it. So yeah, sure, use it. We didn't know that shit was gonna be that big. That shit blew up. Yeah, you hear that right there? That's the live. That's what you got. Is it this one?
No, this is Soul Clap.
Oh, okay. 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 Yeah.
That's Kid Capri in the beginning.
Which part?
Get that motherfucking Soul Clap going on. That's at my show, and he sampled the Been a Stretch from that show. Yeah, so that was the first.
And then it's you're talking
first.
On here, too.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Bend and stretch, keep it going, do the bend and stretch, and as you ride, we go bend and stretch. Everybody always asks me that, what I said. But it was the way it sounded.
It sounded.
Feeling
here
of
we go,
it.
Here we go. Yo, by the way, and props to Showbiz, who makes it sound, the way he sampled it sounds
no
fucking amazing.
No question, he did his thing with that. And after that, my next hit was Nothing But Love, Heavy D. I produced that.
You produced Nothing But Love.
Produced and wrote half of it. My next hit was, after that, was It's Like That with Jay-Z.
That great record. It was one of my favorite Jay-Z records. But there would be, it's hard to say. There might not be a Jay-Z that we know today if Kid Capri wasn't playing.
Not playing. Well, if I didn't give him Hard Knock Life.
Well, that's right. Is that where you were going
to
go?
I'm not going to say he wouldn't be Jay-Z. Of course,
but that record
opened
the tables,
door
man.
For
that record turned the tables.
So
you were playing it.
I was playing it
on
the Diddy tour. I would come out on the first. Usher would come on before me, and then I'd come
which
out.
Which
Usher?
This
Usher
is
the Raymond.
Tour. Yeah, yeah.
The kid.
Yeah. The kid on Usher.
He would come out before me, and then I'd come out
every
and do this
time I
big
think
thing
of you.
They come back out again and play this Hard Knock Life beat that 45 King had did and gave it to me on a plate.
Hold on, hold on. So you had a dub plate.
I had a dub plate.
And it was all the way back then, and that 45 King had made just a dub plate up for
he
fun?
He gave it to me. And at the time, I was making my album Soundtrack to the Streets, and I really wanted to use it. Like so I was playing it in an arena to see if people would respond to it, and all kind of white people and young people and all kind of people would come to me. How did you get this Annie beat behind the drums behind the Annie music? It was crazy. So the third show, Jay had heard me play and ran up. Kid, what the hell is that? You want it? He was like, yeah. Called 45 right there in the arena, put him on the phone 2 weeks later. It was Hard Knock Life.
Now, you didn't try to get it on Soundtrack to the Streets?
He wanted that. I gave it to him.
He wanted it. He, from jump, he was like, this
gave
is
it
mine.
To Jay. Because, see, me and Jay, we had a real big relationship back then. My manager, Christy Clifford, started Rockefeller Records with them.
Your manager is Christy Clifford.
Yeah, okay. See what I'm saying? So, you know, she used to do my work out of their office. You know what I'm saying? So we, you know, I always help him with his shows, or if I need him to come do something, he'll come and do it. You know, we did this like that record. That record wasn't on his album. It was that come on my album. I let him license it for the album. That's how I won the Grammy.
I love that record.
Do you have it on your side?
Yeah.
You have it on your computer? That made the list? That makes the
side?
Just like don't fucking fall off.
He just promoted it. He just produced it. He just performed it. And
on the B-side
show,
thing? He did?
No. Yeah, the B-side show.
Why don't I have it?
Pull it up on YouTube. Wait, he performed at the B-side show?
Yeah, he performed. I had to get the beat ready for him. Just Blaze, because we never had an instrumental of it. So the night before the show, Just Blaze asked me to put it back together again, and I did it for him.
You had to redo it?
I had to redo the beat, yeah. And then he had the band play a little bit behind it, too.
What were the singles from Soundtrack to the Streets?
Soundtrack to the Streets is an underrated album, just so you know.
Yeah, I don't think I ever sat with it. I have it, and I don't think I ever sat with it like that.
You need to listen to it. It definitely good. My new album is dope. But the Soundtrack to the Street album, the single was Snoop and Slick Rick, which I had a little issue with because I did that record with Snoop before he had got signed to Master P at the time.
Mm. And my office.
I needed a video, and, you know, but before me and Master P really had a relationship, he had tried to charge me $200,000. So I ended up not using Snoop, and I did the very first mixtape video. I took three of the songs on the album and put them all together on the video, and that was the very first mixtape video to come out. So it was really dope.
What were the songs in the video?
I used the Slick Rick part.
Yep.
The next song was the Cam'ron and Jermaine Dupri.
Yep.
And the song after that was the Lost Boys song, and it was all put together. It was crazy. It was really dope. If you see the video, it's really dope. But this right here won me a Grammy. So I'm happy about that.
What was the Grammy?
For this record right here.
For the song?
Yeah, for the album. The album, you know, went 5 times platinum because of Hard Knock Life. So I won a Grammy because I let him license this song on the album, on that same album.
It was like three licensed songs. Mm-hmm. That Jay-Z put on that album.
Mm-hmm. So he took this song off of Soundtrack to the Streets and put it on his album. Right. Got it. And that's why I was on the B-sides thing. Got it.
Right.
Wow. Now, we got to talk about Def Comedy Jam for a little bit.
No question.
How does that conversation start?
Russell Simmons comes.
Kick it!
He sees, I was doing a party at Demerara's for LL. It was an after party at the Garden for LL.
Demerara's, oh my God.
Yeah. Shit was shaking. Russell Simmons come in and see this, and he says, yo, what you think about DJing for a comedy show on HBO? And I said, Russell, what the hell you talking about? I ain't understand the two. DJ, but then I said, you know what, this Russell, this HBO, who the hell am I to question? Mm-hmm. Let's just go do the shit. Yo, Rosenberg, when we did that shit, it became the biggest shit ever. When I tell you that shit was so big, the first concert we did, the very first concert we did, they opened the curtain. I'm behind the curtain. They opened the curtain. I couldn't even start playing music because of screams. It was so crazy. And it went like that every night.
Were you guys everywhere?
We did every state 6-7 times. We have a shirt, a Def Comedy. I have a Def Comedy shirt that all the places we've been.
This tour went after
you taped the TV
after
show.
After we did the TV
then
show
you went on
and
a
it
tour.
Blew up,
right.
We went on tour for 9 years, 8 years. And we had so many shows that we had to have 3 different sets. I had to go get Jazzy Jeff. I went and got Jazzy Joyce and put Jazzy Joyce with the girls, put Jazzy Jeff with another team, and then had my team. That was all out at the same time. It was so much. It was so big. I don't understand why Russell stopped it, to tell you the truth. I think they were supposed to be starting to back up again, as a matter of fact. They've been talking about that. Matter of fact, me and Russell just called me about to do a new thing right now with him. about to be really big, man.
So wait, really so big. You're the one who was consistent. The comedians would rotate. From Kid Capri was always
there from the beginning.
Even the host
of the TV show,
right,
to the end of the TV show, and I was there from the beginning of the tour to the end of the tour.
But Russell asked me to DJ the Deaf Poetry Jam.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is it. I'm out of here. Not the same effect, guys.
No. And did you do it? Different.
Of course I did it.
On TV?
I wasn't on TV.
It was just a live
poetry. Because the way I think they were trying to basically recreate Deaf Comedy Jam with poetry.
No.
But.
How about this?
And no.
Can't do it.
How about this? No.
Well, no what?
No, people are not going to treat it the same way they treat comedy.
No, but then it was like, if you watch Deaf Poetry Jam, every poet was edited, so they kind of flowed into each other, not like host, comedian, where, and then you get Kid Capri shining there.
But right. But see, what made Deaf Comedy Jam so dope, yes, I mean, the host, Martin, you know, me, Russell, and the comedians was dope, but it was the audience. It was seeing the audience losing their fucking mind every time the crowd looked so crazy on the television. That's why when they took it to California, I didn't like it as much, because the crowd was... You know, not one like comedian it. Said, my man Tony Robbins said, look at this motherfucker over here. He don't even laugh. He just spell it out. H-A. This shit was the funniest shit ever, but it's the truth. They sit there, they...
Well, by the time you got to Cali...
Like, New York, they fall over the place. California...
There's a bunch of extras in the audience.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Not saying nothing bad, because, you know, it's dope, but they just get that shit so much out there that, you know, it's not going
to
be the same impact.
They're used to
but
tapings.
It still was number one. The show was number one for those 3 years when we came back with Mike Epps and D.L. Hewley hosted it. So if he puts it back on television tomorrow, it's going to be the same results, because it was so powerful. It meant so much to so many people's lives. Like, we sold out everywhere we went. There wasn't an arena or a theater we did that wasn't ram-packed every time we went. It was crazy.
I want to play. I think we should play a game. The game is name a random celebrity and see if Kid Capri has done some sort of event interacting with this person.
Okay.
You mentioned him earlier, so I know it's probably obviously yes, but even beyond what you said, Michael Jordan.
Yes, sir.
Events. There are things that happened.
First thing that did.
I'm
going to tell you the first thing that bugged me on Mike.
It's not black fair. Athlete
it's not fair.
No, let's talk about Mike for a second.
Okay, please.
I did the Chicago Theater, right? It was about 8,000-9,000 people in the audience. I'm on stage. The curtains is closed, and in comes Michael Jordan with his wife, Bo Jackson and his wife, and Ricky Dent. Ricky Dent?
Yeah.
That's his name, right?
They
all came in. Michael Jordan sat his ass.
Richard Dent. Richard Dent, the Chicago Bear. Yeah. Okay.
He sat his ass right there with his wife and just looked at me. To watch to see what I was going to do to his city. I tried to stop a mud hole in that place because he was standing right there.
Did you try too hard?
I tried three hard. But it was crazy. He congratulated me, hugged me. That was the beginning of me and Mike. And then he started coming to my Kentucky Derby things, and that was the end of that. So,
What about Charles Barkley?
Oh, Charles is crazy,
man. Of course. I mean, good old Chuck.
Love Charles, man. Mike Tyson.
He's my favorite, so I was going to get there. How many Mike Tyson stories must you have?
Too many.
I mean, it has to be thousands.
There's two, but I remember one where, remember MK's? Club MK's downtown?
Yeah.
I remember one time me and Mike was in there, and Mike wouldn't let me fucking leave. He bought all the champagne at the bar, gave it to everybody that was standing there. And every time I tried to leave, no, kid, you can't leave. You got to stay with me. You got to stay with me. And I ended up staying with him all night until it was time to leave. The next time I heard from Mike was he was on a television show, and he said, yeah, I'm such and such, and I'm about to go back to New York and go party with my man Kid Capri. I said, oh, shit.
Mike's coming to town. What are we doing?
But, you know, just to hear, he was just iconic at the time. And to hear him say that on the television, how all the people you could have said it about.
But that's what sums up who you were.
Right, yeah.
Is that it wouldn't just be him. That's what anyone would think.
Yeah, that's
what about, he's very popping right now. What about young Kevin Hart?
Kevin Hart's my dude. He come from Deaf Comedy Jam.
Of course. Yeah. So you have history with him.
Yeah, his history is great. I did a birthday party for him a few months back.
Here's a tough one.
Eddie Murphy?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, no question. Did parties for Eddie Murphy. I live not too far from him. Well, who lives in this house now?
Charlie?
He might not live there anymore. He
lives in Jersey. Eddie Murphy's Alicia Keys, I think, living in his
house. Eddie Murphy's house in Jersey.
Yeah, it's Alicia Keys.
I know.
Alicia Keys.
Is it?
It's Alicia Keys. I just did a party at her house too. I did a Swiss through a house party
with the pajama jam. Ebro was there. They were right,
I did that joint, but that house used to be Eddie Murphy's house. That's the joint with the bowling alley. And right now, in that house, Alicia Keys and Swiss have a big ass Mickey Mouse that goes to the third floor. The shit is crazy. They built it inside the house. You can't get it out. Yeah, they built it in there. It was the most amazing shit. I don't know if that had anything.
Okay, I'm gonna take it to the next level.
Yeah.
President Obama.
I was supposed to do his inauguration, me and Stevie Wonder. And I was booked for something else that day. I couldn't make it.
Yeah. You got to cancel that. You have to cancel whatever's booked.
I'm a lawyer.
Well, Obama wasn't hot back then. He didn't know how hot he was.
What about Clinton? You ever have a Clinton event?
I met Clinton. I never did
an event.
I did an event for Martha Stewart.
You did a Martha Stewart event? Yes.
That was weird. Yeah, I did that. I did Donald Trump's house. I did.
But why are they booking you for this? They want like a hip hop edge.
They want that. They know it's not the hip hop edge. It's the party. You can put me in any arena. You put me in EDM music. You can put me in. When I did Khloe Kardashian's wedding with Lamar, it was on television. You know, I knew that their family was
Armenian.
So I had to come in there and with the best Armenian music. They didn't expect that. They didn't ask for it.
How did you find that?
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Best Armenian.
You gotta find someone Armenian.
There's so many Armenians in L.A.
Yeah, you
you knew people.
Yeah, but
how many songs did you play Armenians?
I played a whole half hour. I had maybe seven, but seven of the powerful ones.
Right,
you played them shits.
So you need
crazy
bugging out, and you know that's your job. That's your job.
Yeah, I always try to do shit like that.
Yeah, you got to start. When I go to the cities, first thing I do is who's the hottest DJ out here in the city. I get him on the phone. Get him on the phone. What you doing, my man? Yo, come here. Meet me. Let me know what's the hot thing going on in the city. Yeah. And come by tonight. I'm going to take care of you, blow you up. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for respecting, for letting me come in your city and do. You know, I always give the DJ respect. You know what I'm saying?
But you're also being a G because he does call them up and be like, yo, who's the hottest DJ? Yo, come hang out with Kid Capri for a minute.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you want to know what's going on in their city so this way everybody get their full potential.
And you know it's great for them because they're happy to put you on.
On top
of that. So everyone wins.
So yeah, everybody wins. So it's a good thing. And you build a good relationship with people. You just let know you're not untouchable.
Hold on.
Who?
You have any experiences with the king, Michael?
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
No.
Never met him?
Never met him. But
you're a his fucking
sister,
loser,
Janet
Capri.
Jackson.
We thought you were hot out here, Capri.
His sister, Janet Jackson, told me she was my biggest fan. I remember that. That kind of bugged me
out. Of what, though? You think she had tapes?
You think she
got 52 beats?
Yeah, 52 beats. She heard my tapes. She heard my TV.
And their parties,
TV show,
probably,
my parties. She'd been to my parties before. You know what I'm saying? So she did, it was one. We was at the airport, and, you know, she had her husband come out and brought me to the thing, and she just told me that. But, you know, him, the king really is James Brown. I met him. That's who I met. Me and James, we did the BET Awards together, me, James, and Michael, when we did the tribute to Jam Master Jay. I didn't get a chance to meet Michael because of my situation.
Jackson?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to meet him.
Oh, but you were...
We was all on the same show. Place. But that night, I got a chance. I talked to James when I was a little kid on the phone. But that night,
how did you say from your dad?
My dad. My dad was cool with Bobby Bird. They were real friends. And yeah, so they used to hang out and all that. So I talked to him on the phone one time.
When he picked up the phone, was he like, Bobby?
I met Bobby Bird. Yeah, I met Bobby Bird when I was younger. But
what you got a chance to talk
to him. Was like, 1, 2, 3, ha!
I was standing in front of James. I didn't even know what to say to him.
These are the JBs.
This shit was crazy.
I mean, is that the craziest one for you?
That was it. I was a groupie that night.
You just gave me fucking a mind, whatever you call it.
Mind fuck.
You were playing a JB's record on the radio.
Doing it to death.
Yo, I was like, what the fuck is this?
I play that in parties.
And
go crazy.
Fuck.
Yeah,
but the original
Big James Brown.
Yeah.
The original Soul Clap?
Yeah.
Doom 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 doom.
Yeah.
Alright, hold on. So while Sype's looking that up, my buddy Quartermain, friend of the podcast,
mm-hmm.
is a huge fan of yours. He's from Brooklyn. And he's actually probably goes back a little further in terms of when he was a nerd, even than Syfe, of when he was like paying super attention to hip hop.
Right.
Woo!
That's it.
Yep. Mean. Okay, so I asked for a bunch of questions for you, and he was like, oh shit. Here's what we got. First thing, ask him about Stephanie Mills on Impeach the President.
Oh, fire.
Good job, Quarterman.
That became one of the anthems on the mixtape, as a matter of fact. I had that a cappella and something just said, just don't impeach the president, but it was the way I did it. It was like it was a song. It was like it was put together like a song.
No, and you did it on Video Music Box and Rockin' Wheels mixtape shop with Big L.
Yeah.
By the way, we got to get to Big L. We're going to get to Big L too. Yeah. So this was, Syfe, will you play it real quick? So this is just a thing?
It was just something that just blew up in the street.
And it was just an a cappella of hers. It was just a blend you made that you.
Yep. And I talked to Stephanie Mills recently about that too. And she had thanked me for that.
I don't see it.
You can't find it on YouTube? What's it called? Does it have a specific name?
Just Something the Way You Make Me Feel.
Oh, it's Something the Way You Make Me Feel. I mean, that is legend. I mean, that is. Yeah, I didn't even realize what we were talking about because I'm an asshole. Do you consider yourself to be the first celebrity DJ?
I wouldn't call myself the first celebrity DJ. I would call myself the first celebrity DJ by myself. You had Jazzy Jeff in front of, in back of... Fresh Prince,
of course.
You have Jam Master Jay, and Run DMC.
Got him.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, found it, Syfe.
You had to be. You had Grandmaster Flash behind the Furious Five. You had to be that.
Wasn't video music until I came out. MTV Raps.
But you were the first solo.
When I came out, I was the first solo. Yeah, first solo.
Oh,
which is dope.
I'm getting very excited. While Syfe's playing that, hold on. I'll do another one. Tell us about, and this is a very good question. I'm glad he brought this up.
Wait,
here we go.
Yeah, it's not him. Hold on. I used to study this fucking tape. I have this on video tape.
So you know this episode. You know where to go, Syfe?
So kick if we give us a little demonstration how you do that.
By all means,
necessary.
And
as we put it on a little something like this for the Uptown crew.
No, this scratches my heart.
Showbiz?
That shit was so big. I don't know why it was so big, but it crazy. Got crazy.
Was that where it debuted
street.
Or no? Are you were you already?
No,
playing
I was already
then?
Playing that in the mixtapes, and then they wanted me to do that on MTV because it was so. I didn't understand why it was so iconic, but
were you a little paranoid about having to do the live blend on television?
Nah, never paranoid.
You never got worried. You never get worried
There's
about
only
blends.
One time I got a little nervous, and that was when I first did the Apollo. I mean, rightfully so.
Of course.
You know.
And this is early on.
Yeah, it's 88.
What's up with the goddamn internet, Joey?
What was your first gig at the Apollo?
We was a guest. We was doing my first record when I first got my first album deal was called The Apollo, but I had that record, that song years before I got my first deal. And when The Apollo was going through their turmoil with their money, where they was going to close, I had donated my first single money to them. It was called The Apollo, so I donated to them, and I started hosting The Apollo afterwards, but before I would come there, they wouldn't even let me in the room, in The Apollo.
And the first night you played there, you just played your record?
No, we performed.
You performed the record?
Yeah, we performed. Oh, I didn't even have a record yet. I did some shit on the four-track in the house, and that's what we performed with. And I thought we was going to get booed when we walked out there, because I've watched people walk out, didn't even get a chance to rub the thing, and get booed just by the way they walked out. Just by the way they look.
Energy wasn't right.
It was bad by the time when they walked out. I didn't even get to the mic yet. They get booed all the way to the mic. So I've seen that a lot. So I was nervous like shit. And when we got out there and did our thing and got through it, they let me host it. So my confidence was up then.
All right. What about your friendly rivalry with the great DJ Clark Kent?
Ooh.
Never had a rivalry with Clark Kent.
No.
Doo-wop.
Doo-wop had to
rap.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Quarterman, you piece of shit. Okay, what about your rivalry with Doo-wop?
What happened with Doo-wop was...
It's the best.
I used to go to Kennedy High School. And me and Doo-wop...
Were you the guy that threw the teacher out the window?
No, that wasn't me. That was years later when niggas got rowdy in there. But me and Wop, I didn't know he was Wop. I didn't know his name was Doo-wop. And we used to see each other in the morning, puff weed, whatever, you know, bullshit we used to do. And then when I got on, when I started getting known, this dude walked up to me and said, yo, kid, I got this tape with this kid about to diss you. He about to bring this joint out. He gave me a little bit of it on the tape. He played it for me. So
was it the scenario one?
Shit. It was some shit WAP was doing. I said, oh, shit. That night, I made the beat on a 4-track, wrote the rhyme. Shit was out the next day. The Break 'em Up, Kid, Break 'em Up. That shit was out the next day. And that shit just, it was my last tape I made. It was the last one I made. It was 93. This shit blew up crazy. WAP didn't expect that because he thought he was going to come out with it first.
Why did he want to diss you, though?
He wanted to get on. That's what it really was. Uh-oh. He said that one day he came in the rink and I was on the mic and said, yo, they go do WAP my son. People that know me know I don't even talk like that. Like, I, yo, but, you know, do what you got to do.
I mean, for the record, that wouldn't have been that. Is that big an insult?
I guess he took it as an insult.
I know, but isn't Doo-Wop's a few years younger? Like, and he came, like, it's not that.
But I still wouldn't talk like that.
You still wouldn't say that.
The fact that it wasn't said and he said I said it, that's enough for me to
know that it's
just
a problem.
To get on,
right.
So you said what you could, but this is the way you're going to do it. All right, cool. And I brought the attention to him like that, and I made one tape. He made about 50 tapes after me. It was crazy. But then when he got serious is when he disrespected my mother and my girl. And that's when I had to check him. That's
what
when,
the? Wait, are y'all cool now?
Oh, we stopped. We made records together now.
Right,
cool
that's what
now.
I thought.
But back
okay,
then
I didn't want to bring up some shit.
WAP was my dude. WAP was my dude. We was young.
WAP, I love Capri. And when they were beefing, I hated it. But there was some good shit.
It was dope. He's
Kid
dope. And WAP
what's the
dope.
Best shit that came out of it?
Kid Capri from Dwick. Mm-hmm. And bitch ass homo from Scenario.
Uh-huh.
Like Kid Capri, you bitch ass homo. I was like, it was dope for hip hop. But just combining those records at that time when there was no like Pro Tools or anything that was live.
Oh, that's dope. That's a funny story. All right, hold on. I'm not done though. I got more for you, Kid Capri. There's a couple other good ones in here I got to get to.
Wait, why? Hold on. It's working.
Is it coming up yet?
Here we go.
By all means necessary, it's the Kid Capri, and as we put it on a little something like this for the uptown.
You sound exactly the same.
You don't have none of the records of me and WAP? Mixtape shit?
You don't have them?
No, do you have them?
You don't have them?
Oh, no.
Yeah, you gotta get those, man. They're hot. Mixtape shit was hot.
Now, what impeaches this? Is the literally the breakbeat?
That's the ultimate breakbeat.
So the loop light? Only goes a couple bars. This is not like a whole loop record.
This one
so
was,
you have to keep bringing it back.
Yeah. That's why I was doing it like that.
So you're checking the tempo. Bring it back. Because it's about to end.
He just needle dropped it.
But see, you know what? This is not even a good example of what I really did with it. That was that day, but now it's a different way.
But still, it's like you're playing the turntable as an instrument.
Exactly. Just like I use
my voice.
And then
I let it go a cappella. Oh, change the beat. I forgot about this. It'll drop. There we go.
There he's queuing up.
Flip mat looks crazy.
It's another blend. Back to back.
This is back in the day when you could do these blends live in a club, right?
Yeah.
Now you do this, people be like, the fuck you doing?
We having a good time. My band Rockin' Will, CJ's Music City, up in Harlem. We get ready to roll it.
Okay,
made a lot of money at that place.
Tell us about Big L, the relationship with Big L.
My man, that was my dude. You would hear him on the mic, and you would think he's the most dangerous dude ever, but the most humblest dude ever. Cool as shit. And I used to always tell him, yo, L, you are a star and you about to be very big. You need to stop standing on this corner. You need it, because he's living on 139th and 139th Street in Harlem. And I used to always tell him, yo, you know, I know you got your dudes out here, you know, everything, but dog, you need to be in the house writing, stay in the house writing, do what you got to do, stay out of the way, stay out of the house. I used to always tell him that. I used to drive down there just to see if he was out there. Go out there, hang out with him for a little bit on the corner, chill with him. You know what I'm saying? You know, his way was,
you knew him
these
through
are my
show.
People.
Well, how'd you know him? Through show or through on your own?
Through, you know, DITC, through all of them. All
right.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I think Lord Finesse, that was Lord Finesse's artist.
Yep, it was.
Yeah, and...
But you got put on the record. I mean, you're on...
Yeah, because me and Finesse was cool. I did records with Finesse, did Diamond. Like, I produced joints with Diamond. You know, it was just a circle.
And you have the interlude
and
on Diamond D's album.
Right.
Right? Or is it Showbiz and AG or Diamond D's album?
I did the internet. Well, I did an interlude on both of them, but I produced the joint on Diamond's album called Five Fingers of Death.
Right, of course.
With all of them.
That's for the second album.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, with L, he was the new dude in the group. So they needed, at the time, I'm sizzling, so they wanted me to, like, kind of give him that stamp.
Of course.
And put sizzling. It on with that stamp.
If you were sizzling, it made perfect sense to have you featured on Put It On.
Yeah, it definitely did good, but it's a classic record. Classic record. Anywhere we go.
It's and isn't like it crazy, just to sort of tie it up full circle, I mean, you know, and then this week Chinx passes away.
That's crazy.
And it's and even though it's a different situation,
the term passes away when
he was killed. He was murdered. Chinx was murdered. And obviously there are differences, but there's similarities. There's also similarities.
The similarities is that when you in the hood, man, you know, you trying to make it out of the hood, and it doesn't matter what anybody talk about. It doesn't matter you say you left the hood. Fuck that. That's what you're doing. You working to better yourself. You working to get out of the hood to do things to take care of your family and do things to take care of yourself. But sometimes when you're stuck in that hood, there are people there that don't look at you with the colors that you look at for yourself. You know what I'm saying? They see it in a way where, you know, you want to be able to blend with everybody. I'm an advocate of going to hang with everybody. I'm with the Mexican gangs, the Crips, Bloods. I'll go in any neighborhood, play for anybody. But I also know where, what to do and when to do it. And that's how you got to roll. You got to know that you just can't be just anywhere, because you'll find yourself in a situation, man, that's not cool, man. And it's an unfortunate thing for Chinx, because he was on his way. He was about to be on his way. He was a cool dude,
and
too.
He died the same way as Stack Bundles.
Yeah. Well, I read that the police are looking into it because, I mean, they could be totally off, but because it's so eerily similar, they're like curious about that. They think it's, the police think it's curious that it's such a similar death.
It's crazy.
And isn't it weird, like, with the case of Chinx, he had a little thing going, got a little quiet for a second.
Mm-hmm.
This Saturday, when I recorded my Sunday night show, my brother was up visiting, and I looked at my brother. I was like, fuck, I just played Chinx four times on my show this week. I was like, I think he might be about to have a little thing, right? Because he's on Off the Rip, the French record. Then I randomly picked another record off French's mixtape called, like, Coke Boy Money. That fucking Chinx sounds great on. Then Daytona just dropped a record with Chinx that's fantastic.
Really? I like They Know We Are In Here.
He just had a bunch
that's
of shit.
That's hard. I like that joint. I was playing that on Shade 45 not too long ago.
And so I was like, and so I recorded the show Saturday. Meanwhile, Sunday, by the time my show airs, I had to go add a special intro to the show to talk about him. But I didn't change the middle of the show.
Right.
So in the middle of the show, I'm playing his songs, and I'm like, shout out to Chinx, blah, 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 the day fucking before.
That's crazy.
It's just, I mean, it's so fucking sad.
Crazy shit, man. But.
A couple things I want to get to before you go. The records. Saif, talk about the piles of records that would be left next to Kid Capri's turntables when he would be blowing through a party.
It's the one thing I didn't like about Kid Capri.
Okay, it had to drive you insane, Saif. This is the most organized man in America. This had to drive you crazy.
Because he moves so fast when he changes records that he would just stick the one he just played just in a pile next to him, and they would just start piling up no covers.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I respect you as a man, but this is hurting me right now.
Did you fuck up records doing that?
No.
They'd be okay. Sitting on top of each other, they'd be fine.
The whole time I've been using them. No scratches, no nothing.
So people get nervous about laying records on top of each other. They really don't scratch each other when they're sitting on top.
They can, depending on how you handle them.
If you just place it on top.
If you just place it, it's cool. If you sliding them and throwing them.
So you didn't have did you have then someone else, an assistant, who would then have to put them all fucking back?
No, I did it. Or sometimes I just leave them out.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, and then play, and then
and
reverse
put the
it?
Whole stack in the crate just like that.
Because you know that's the order in reverse that you were playing.
I know I was going to end up using some of it or something again. I just got tired of putting them back and forth in the covers. I get tired of doing that shit with the 45s, too. That shit is a pain in the ass.
Oh, right now? I know.
A pain in the ass with that.
So are you playing out with 45s a bunch now?
I play them when there's 45 parties.
Like, you'll go play a special set. Do you have, like, do you have the Rich Medina bag?
No.
Do you have the Rich Medina bag?
No, I don't have Rich's bag.
The bags. I paid full price. He hit me up. He was like, I would have given you a discount.
Yeah.
Because it's expensive as shit, but it's a great bag.
45 King just put out new bags, too. I got to get one from
him. Oh, really?
Yeah, I was on the phone with him yesterday. I'm on the phone with him all the time.
And he said he put out a bag.
Yeah.
A 45 King.
He got 45 King bags. He got, he just put out new 45s. He got, he got whistles. He got some shit. He always doing something.
So, but with how quickly would you play records? For people who've never been to a Kid Capri party, in those days in vinyl, how fast were you switching records?
There's times where I'll play shit. It depends on what's going on. Some records I'll just play the hook. Some records I'll play something for four bars just because I want the intro of it. It depends. It depends on what's going on, you know what I'm saying, what I'm doing. But you'll see me run through shit. But see, you'll watch a lot of DJs come and try to do that. And what happens is they don't make sense, and you could piss people off. Because already you some of the records you're cutting off, you know what I'm saying? But you when you cut it off, you have to make sure that that next record you play is going to make them forget to get mad that that last record was cut
exactly.
off. You see what I'm saying? But when you do something like play Planet Rock and then Computer Love afterwards, it's like, you know, it don't balance out. You throwing everything off. If you can keep it making sense, there's been a lot of DJs that come out. I name one DJ. I ain't gonna name him, but one DJ is very, very, very known that come on, that could try to come on after me.
What's that bitch nigga's
shows?
Name?
Yeah,
name that motherfucker,
shows,
man.
In these shows, and you know, it don't really work out for him too good. But that's because he's trying to do me.
So
do
how does a DJ follow Kid Capri?
Good question, you
do
Sife.
Do you? I mean, my style of DJing, there wasn't too many more styles of DJing that you come out that's as fly as that word, really, to really put it out there. But that's why so many people adapt to that style of DJing, the yelling on the mic, the
quick transition.
Everything, the quick transitions came from Def Comedy Jam because I had a 15-minute set on the show, so I had to play the records quick. And when I seen what I did to the crowd with that, I applied it to my parties. And then the DJ started seeing me do that. That's how that started.
But for everyone out there listening, I mean, you'll hear a DJ doing it on the radio or something or at a club, and they're doing it with Serato, and you still go. Like, yeah. For example, Mr. C is great at playing records quickly.
Yes, he is.
And sometimes I'm like, damn, see, that's very fast. How are you doing that? Even on Serato.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with vinyl, it's psychotic. Your needle dropping skills. Different. I mean, were you labeling records with stickers as well?
No.
Never did that.
Mm-mm. I mean, back in the days. We.
So have you ever put stickers on records?
You mean stickers to find a place?
Yes.
No.
Never did that. Yeah, I never.
I did it like on a couple records that had maybe my name was on it or something.
I would do that with breakbeats. Like back in the days, breakbeats, you put an arrow on there so you can see where the beats start. But years later, all my shit was clean. Yeah, everything was clean.
But what about? Did you put marks? The little stickers as a mark? Never put marks.
I always did something to challenge myself, such as playing Absolute Mode.
Yeah,
we've always been like that.
Always stay on top of it.
When you
never do nothing to help you, just. You stay on top of it.
Do you way. Be honest? Answer me honestly, Kid Capri. Don't be a fucking liar, all right? Like Cypher sounds.
A fucking liar.
Okay. Piece of shit.
Exactly. Don't be a lying piece of shit. Do you catch yourself looking at your computer screen when you DJ these days?
No, and that. You need to go on the internet and see when Shaheen Reed asked me what's the five things top five things that I don't like the most of a DJ, and that was one of them. Stop looking at the fucking screen when you're DJing.
What did I tell you, G Code?
Stop looking at the screen. You look unprofessional. You like you don't know what you're doing. You're unsure of yourself. And
it's hard not to.
I gotta be honest. I think I'm in a bad place with it. I called Daryl Quartermain, same dude, came up to me and he was like, "Yo, stop looking at your computer. People are watching you, and you're watching your computer." Yeah. And I was like, "Fuck, I am.
This is true."
And keep in mind, I'm a vinyl DJ still.
Right.
And it's funny because when I'm on 45s, obviously I'm not doing that.
Right.
But the second I get back on my Serato, right, I use that fucking crutch and start looking at it.
Nah, but see, that's the problem with the computer is that it's already cheating. You can't use all the trickery with it because what's going to happen is you'll get caught up in that. Like, you want to stay as pure as possible.
What do you mean by
cheating? That's why the CDJ thing is cool for whoever uses it. I'm not knocking it, but it's just, to me, I can't do it, man. I need to touch
a
needle. Drop a needle on the record. I got to do that.
I agree, Kid Capri. I personally think, in my opinion, a man who would choose to use a CDJ over a turntable, that's a bitch-ass motherfucker right there. That's the kind of man you can't fuck with. This guy fucking loves CDJ.
I had a chat with myself years ago. And was like, my skill comes from entertaining the crowd. They don't know what medium I'm using.
They don't. They don't give a shit. They don't care.
And I still, to this day, will go on and practice on turntables. But
yeah, I did a party with Biz.
I know it's not going to go back, though.
I did a party with Biz. And he was using iPads.
Shit.
Yeah, two iPads and a little mixer.
It makes no difference. If you're good, how was it?
I can't do it. But, you know, that's Biz. He can get away with it. It's Biz, you know. But
But it's I couldn't do it. Biz is a different kind of DJ also. People aren't there to hear Biz's light hands on the records. That's not what Biz Markie does.
Right. But I am definitely in a bad place. If you told me to DJ...
I tried to.
I did it, though.
Oh, no, you did Vinyl Serato, fine.
Yeah, but because your needles were on there. I don't even know if I have needles in my DJ bag.
I need new needles. What are your favorite needles for both Serato and vinyl? You
have one that
you
like? The 44 is now.
The short?
Yeah, the short 44 is now. I mean, for years I always used the Ortofon. I put Ortofon on, as a matter of fact, with Def Comedy Jam. Yeah, yeah.
So I still use the blue Ortofons for vinyl and Serato. Yeah, you prefer the short 44s?
Now I do.
For both 45s and?
Yeah, now I do. Well, I've been using the Ortofons up to now, but I just started recently using the 44s a lot.
Do you have
I also have these needles that I got in Japan that they gave me that's not over here. They look like Ortofons, but they're not. You can punch them shits and they won't jump.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you use, I noticed the other day when Breakbeat Lou was at my party.
Who's Breakbeat Lou again?
He was the DJ.
No, I know, but
like, where's he from?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know Breakbeat Lou's history?
I don't know his history, but he's a Bronx legend. He, you know,
he's a Bronx 45 DJ. Like, he didn't always play 45s, actually. He said it came around to them like the... He always bought them. He didn't start spinning them, though, I think, till like the late 90s. But he's just a breakbeat dude and has every fucking record ever, or a lot of them. I think he had like the little grippy slip mats for his 45s. Yeah, you have that?
Nah.
You put your hands on the 45s.
Yeah.
Yo, Max...
Me too.
On some reggae shit, Max got these... It's the fucking dopest shit ever.
Please tell me right now, why haven't you told me this yet?
It's some 70s shit. I don't know why. It's a 12-inch platter.
Yeah, that you put the 45 in.
And there's a 45
groove
in the middle. And it already has the 45 adapter in it, and you put the 45 in the middle, and it has a little section to hold it, but you still scratch the outside 12-inch platter.
Now, what we used to do back in the days...
We used to tape it.
Tape it to the 12-inch.
Yeah, tape the 45.
Right. Flex told me that. Flex said the only interest he ever had in 45s was like, if I had to use one, I would tape it to a 12-inch.
Tape it to a 12-inch.
So, Sype, but this platter,
when
you touch the record, it holds it in place. It's like it's connected.
It's definitely like some kind of rubber or felt grip where the 45 is.
Yeah.
And then you touch the outside platter. The platter just looks like a Serato vinyl.
And you don't have those though?
No, I don't have.
No, that's some 70s shit.
I need.
No, but they still sell those. I think they
brought them back. Yeah, Max has like these, like the
Spinner
packaging.
Got
looks.
Those. Scratch got those.
Yeah.
Kenny Dope got those.
Is it helpful? You think it'll be helpful?
Yeah, it is. Because
Max is, you know, reggae DJs is on 45
always.
Way before all this new craze.
Of course, he's always had to play.
So, so he's laughing like, 45s,
You know, what the fuck are you doing?
I've been on this.
What's your favorite mixer these days?
I like...
Say it. Say the right one. Come on.
The 900 is dope.
Pioneer.
Mm-hmm. The 800 is dope. I like the Pioneer mixers.
Oh, your Pioneers. I'm fully now in love with my Rain 62.
The Rain, I don't like that, man.
Too many buttons, man.
I don't like that, man. I don't like no mix that look like a disco. It's too much shit on it.
I agree.
It's too much shit.
It looks psychotic. Yeah, I totally
you don't
agree.
Need all that shit. It's like,
but I will tell you, and you're right. You know, listen, the Pioneer basically.
I have a 57, but the 57's plain.
It's very plain. Yeah. It's very plain.
That's what I like. That's what I have in the house,
But when you get very comfortable with the 62, it has a few things. The ability, for example, when I do my radio show, the ability to go back and forth with the keypads between cue points and drops, like how easy it is to bounce back and forth in both.
Yeah, for those
and then
days,
I put effects on my drops. I echo out all my drops. Like, there's a lot of fun shit you can do.
That's dope when you're doing radio or if you're doing
but you
something
want, for
in
basic
your house. But for when you in your and you need to stomp shit on stage, you don't need all that shit.
No, all I want, all I really need on stage. What I really would want is if they would take everything out and leave the following.
Yeah.
The ability to put echo on anything.
Right.
I need echo everything.
No question.
Especially when you're playing fucking 45s, you have a nasty one that skips.
Right.
And you can have a little echo to fade out of something, get a little bit of help. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And for your voice, of course. That's I need that.
That's what I need it for.
And if you can have something that can trigger sound effects, that's ideal. I would love to have that.
Yeah, yeah. That's Q-It. You know what Q-It is?
Yeah.
Q-It is dope.
I forgot about Q-It. I haven't used Q-It in a long time.
I still have it.
I never even used
my man Vince.
Yeah, of course, Vince from Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
Now,
what about have you ever used any of these like new controllers?
No,
you don't fuck with any of those.
None of that shit. I don't do none of that.
Sipes got the controllers on everything.
What happens when you have to though?
I never have to. Why do I have to?
Turntables. What if they die?
How? How?
How many turntables do you have, Capri?
Four pair.
Eight total? Mm-hmm. All working?
Mm-hmm. Look at you with your math skills.
Mm-hmm. Four pairs. And I got two little 45 turntables.
Eight some?
Whoa. What do you mean?
Two little 45.
What are they?
Three, as a matter of fact.
What are they? They're like ones you can actually play with, or are they just to play records?
Yeah, play them. Do you cut them, scratch them?
What company?
Newmark.
Newmark makes a little 45 turntable?
Crazy, too.
Are they good?
Yeah, they dope, but you got to see the shit's biz.
I've seen them. I've played one, of course.
Are those real? We're trying to figure out.
I told you I saw.
Biz got.
The technique was. The 1200.
It's the craziest shit I've ever seen.
But.
Nasty, man.
How does he get that? Is it fake?
Because he's a big fucking kid. That's why he gets whatever he wants. That's why he's rich bastard. Made,
I know.
He gets whatever he wants. He'd be like that forever.
I went and saw it, Saif, when he did the
this is crazy,
when he did the Bowery, like the 45 party. I went. I saw it. I was like,
oh, to rob him for the joints.
I know.
It's
the greatest.
I wouldn't even use them shits. I just
They're
look
so
at them.
So fucking Saif. Hey,
crazy.
How are the chicks at these 45 parties you do? How are the chicks?
Yo, when I did the Red Bull joint. The Red Bull 45 joint.
Different.
Bad chicks walking up.
Yeah, Red Bull's different.
Do you have this 45? Can you play? Chicks was walking up to me, giving me 45s to play. It was because of what they were doing. They were in the back of the club, they would have record dealers, 45 record dealers. They'll bring all their records and shit out there. And you
so girls would bring you a
Girls would bring the 45s, go back there, buy a 45, they bring it to me, play it. It was crazy.
I'm going to leave now because the shit talking coming out of your mouth, Capri.
Yeah, man.
There's no girls.
At the
Red
Bull one?
45.
Why not? Girls bring records to scratch at Milk River in Brooklyn. He does a vinyl night on Wednesday, and they bring vinyl for him to play it.
And they'll bring vinyl?
And what Cookie Monster type girls are these?
No, they're cuties.
You know what's
white like, girls, Spanish girls, long hair, beautiful.
Bringing 45s.
45s.
I do believe, Saif, that would happen in a Red Bull event.
Yeah, in the Red Bull event.
When was that?
That was California. That was 2 years ago.
Nice. That's dope. Yeah. I wish they'd done that. Saif, next week, Red Bull on Wednesday is showing their documentary about radio in the 80s, hip-hop radio in the 80s. Mm. Have you heard about that? Marley's in it, Red Alert. It's a whole hip-hop thing. Anyways, yo, Kid Capri, this has been a real treat, man.
I want to talk about something else that y'all probably don't know.
Okay, here we go.
Y'all watch Battle Rap?
From time to time. He doesn't. I do.
You should.
No.
Well, anyway.
Don't bother with him.
Anyway, the stigma of Battle Rap was Battle Rappers can't make good records. That's been the stigma for the longest. So what I did was I made a new album called Top Tier. I took all the top battle rappers and produced them. And this album is dope. This shit is dope. When y'all hear it,
Kid Capri.
And you're not listening to his album?
When you hear it, it ain't no battle rappers. That's not what you're going to hear. It's a battle rapper album. It's a battle rapper album. It's not a battle rap album.
So who's on it?
Loaded Lux, Daylight, Swave Sever. Shit, John the Don, Chilla Jones, Miss Hustle.
Were you a fan of all of battle rap?
I've been a fan since battle rap started from back in the days. But
now you've liked this era too.
I started watching battle rap in 06, and I went and got Loaded Lux. I'm sitting in my house. I'm saying, why ain't this shit on television? This shit is so entertaining.
I mean, that part.
Why it's not on television? So I went and got Loaded Lux. And told Lux I want to bring it to HBO. So we shot this thing. I went and got Big Daddy Kane, Rakim, and KRS to be my judges. They judged the thing for me. We did this big day, did the battle rap joint, and the shit came out dope. And we was going to put it out. Some things happened with me and Lux and it prevented it. But I stayed with the battle rap, stayed watching it, stayed on them, stayed a fan of it, supported it, everything. And then one day I just said, you know what? I was in Miami, in my crib in Miami, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to do an album on battle rappers. Nobody else do it. Everybody keeps saying that they can't make records. I'm going to prove everybody wrong. And that's what I did.
Can you send me a record or two? Can I hear this?
I got the records with me. I got the...
Saif? You all right?
I fell asleep for a second.
I'm telling you, man. Don't do that. Don't do that, Saif. Don't do that, Saif.
Listen, you got to go through. If you get me one that I actually... I'll beg him.
I'm going to make sure you get the album before it come out, and I'm going to let y'all preview it for yourself and see what I did.
I'm very excited to hear that. Especially for Loaded Lux, who's very close fame-wise. People really checking for him.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get a record.
Mook, all of them.
And Mook, too. I'll tell you what. I think I cannot believe the right producer hasn't come along to figure that out for television.
Because they have that stigma. And the thing about it is
stop punching each other in the face every 6 months.
The thing about it is that some of the best battle rappers came out. Eminem's a battle rapper.
Yep.
KRS is a battle rapper. Meek Mill is a battle rapper.
Yep.
Yes.
They needed somebody to say, with direction, to say, do it like this, lean on the joint like this, you know, rhyme on this type of joint, and direct them. battle rappers have a bad name because they want to be the producer too.
No, never that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can't do
that. That will never work. And also, for television's sake, the thing that could push us over the top is, you know, Drake loves it. Yep. If Drake tried to executive produce it and put his name on it, I think he could walk it in some place.
Well, I'm doing this, I'm having this conversation with Eminem about this album right now. You know, I did the Slaughterhouse thing. Eminem had called me for that, to judge that, because I'm so much in battle rap. You know, they respect my opinion, and they know I know what I'm speaking about when I speak on it. But me and him is talking right now about this album, and we just had a meeting with them, as a matter of fact. So it's looking
Meek
real good.
Meek Mill is my favorite.
Meek is
and
dope.
I'm gonna tell you all his battles I watch.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't like him?
I don't watch him.
Sife only needs to hear beats. Sife doesn't listen to words.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to your words.
See? Exactly. He faded out. Hey, Kid Capri, this has been a real, real pleasure. It's an honor. You're one of the greatest to ever do it. We appreciate you coming and sharing these
stories. Appreciate you having me, man. Every time, man. I respect what y'all do. Y'all some funny motherfuckers too.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
Hold on.
Kid Capri on BLS.
Wow.
Underrated record, by the way.
Where I first heard Scenario. I lost my shit. Who's playing Scenario? And where I first heard Uptown Anthem.
Mm. By the way, 91 had there were a few joints. But let me say that.
Hey,
Night Shift
you
right
could
there.
Yeah. You could smoke a spliff. You could smoke a spliff. You could smoke a spliff. Hey.
How many? Being told that last question.
You could smoke a spliff.
How many scratches do you generally use? Pay attention, G-Code. This is important.
What do you mean, how many scratches?
Like, how many different... When you think about it, like how you just did the... We all have our amount of scratches.
I was just saying that to you. Remember the other day? Everyone has their own go-to...
Their go-to scratches.
Like when you first get on anybody's set, and you just warming up, testing the needles.
You
know what I'm saying? Like, always the same shit.
My shit is always to try to make the scratches sound like it's a part of the record. To make it sound like it's an instrument in the record.
Rhythmic. You like being really rhythmic with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you don't have set stuff you always go to?
Mm-mm.
You can't. Nobody knows it until you... You get have to have turntables here and have them get on.
Get on and you...
I saw a documentary of the all the guys that played the music on all the famous Motown records. I think they're called the...
Funk Brothers. I heard the documentary is amazing.
Funk Brothers, right? So they were like the studio musicians,
mm-hmm.
and they were the drummers were all talking about this one drummer that had died, and they would be like, when I do my roles, it's like doo-doo-ba-doo-boom. But yo, when he did it was like doo-ba-doo-ba-doo-boom. You know, they had like they all knew each other's like signatures, but that's like in your blood.
Yeah,
like I could do Red Alert scratches. You know, I could do Premiere scratches. I could do Kid Capri scratches.
Can you do
I could
flexes?
Do flexes. Oh, flexes is easy because. He always brings it back and then pauses. So he brings it back and goes...
right. Well, that's one of his. That's one of his go-to. I stole that one from him. I stole a lot of... I stole most of my stuff from...
But you have your own... Everyone has their own go-to.
Yeah, I think mine is... Yeah, I can do it with my hand, but I can't really describe what it sounds like with my... Dip. It's really big. Like, generally speaking, though, when I'm in a party in particular, I don't use many. It's not many. It's a few that I keep going back to over and over again.
I really have.
Do you consider yourself a great... How strong a scratcher do you consider yourself to be?
Pretty good. He's pretty decent. But there's a lot of dudes that scratch.
No, but it's party scratching. He's the best party scratcher.
No, I'll go in.
I'll go in.
Yeah.
You're trying to stand there? Would you get next to Jazzy Jeff?
Your scratching is different, Capri. Your scratching... This is the bonus part of One Up. It's ended and now we're doing the bonus part. Your scratching is like... Like you were saying, like it's part... Of the party,
yeah,
like it's more
because
rhythmic.
That's what I give you. But if I take you in my crib,
yeah,
or if you do a sound, we do a sound check. That's when you really see, you know what I'm saying. You really see some other shit.
Like, can you do Premiere type chorus scratches?
Of course.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do all that shit.
Why are you doubting him?
No, I'm not doubting him. I'm saying I
he just never seen it.
No. I'm not saying that.
But what
I'm
about
not doubting your skills, Capri. Please don't take this as disrespect.
Never,
I just
ever.
Know the way you scratch in a party. And, like, the shit I love about you is that you'll be scratching and talking at the same time. But it's like a drummer is playing behind you. And you're like, Kid Capri, we rock.
Yo, it was crazy shit when I used to rap. And DJ at the same time. That was really big. A lot of my part. I just rhyme. Because I said some of the rhymes on my mixtapes. That's how I got my first album deal. Because the rhymes on my mixtapes was cool. And they wanted me to say those rhymes on the album. So I would say those and then write other shit. Whatever. But when I used to rhyme and DJ at the same time, it amazed people because that's something that you got to
coordination. That's exactly. That's like drumming. That's like using separate hands. It's like limb separation almost.
But right now, my thing is, I mean, you know, the DJ thing is the bread and butter. But
the album,
The album, the production, you know, the producer never really been my bread and butter, even though I got hits, whatever. But
what are your biggest production credits, by the way?
Nothing But Love, It's Like That, Unify, joint with Nas, Soundtrack to the Street.
Yep.
The Rangers, The Lost Boy, there's a lot of joints. The Foxy and Lox joint, my whole first album. But this album right here, I got a chance to really do what I want to do.
Were you Sporty Thieves too?
Who?
Did you bring out Sporty Thieves?
No, I toured with them though. I never brought them out though.
But you weren't. They weren't your act.
No,
they were just you guys with the same label at the same time, right?
Yeah, Columbia.
Yo, hey, listen, thank you.
I love y'all, man.
It's an honor and a pleasure.
Zach, we got to do a comedy show together.
Please.
That would be real dope.
Yeah, y'all are stupid.
Because I was thinking about doing it anyway, a comedy tour. Everybody kept asking me about doing comedy shows.
Hey, listen, I'm not on the radio anymore. My wife got that baby thing out of her, so now I can fucking hit the road.
You mean your child?
Yeah, my child. It's out. Child, it was inside. She was like, oh, it's around. Stay around. But it's out now.
It's safe.
It's chilling.
So you're good.
I'm out. I'm on the road.
So you guys should hit the road. You're wasting money, both of you. And Sife? Do we have one you wanted to hear about? Oh, the Amber Rose show. But yeah, it was the pilot. We'll tell you later.
Yeah. What's going on with the Amber Rose show?
You know what? If there's an opportunity, I got you.
Okay.
All right. shout out to my man, Adam Rosenberg, who I didn't mention by name earlier for everything he's did with the Barbershop 3. That was pretty dope. And guess what? He's become a Juan Epp fan, Sif.
Who's Adam Rosenberg?
He's a gentleman in the movie biz who I had a meeting with a while ago, and he was like a hip-hop head, but then he started listening to this podcast.
Nice.
And now he's
like
a fan of the podcast.
Adam.
Hey, guys.
Love your first name. Hate your last name.
That's not nice.
Well, because I hate you.
I know. Good night.